for the greatest democracy in the world. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate has approved the $124 billion Iraq War funding bill that contains a troop withdrawal start date of October 1st. The Senate vote was 51 in favor to 46 opposed. A day ago, the House approved the spending bill with the timeline for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. The House vote was 218 to 208. President Bush has repeatedly insisted he will veto any spending bill that contains a timetable for a U.S. troop pullout. The top U.S. commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, held a press conference at the Pentagon today. He described the situation in Iraq as, quote, exceedingly complex and very tough. He added that the war may become worse before it gets better. He said the endeavor will require, quote, an enormous commitment over time. A spokesman for the Iraqi government criticized the congressional vote for sending the wrong signals. A senior U.S. officer in Iraq has been charged with aiding the enemy, according to the U.S. military. He is accused of providing an unmonitored cell phone to Iraqi detainees. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is signaling that she will not agree to the congressional subpoena to testify about discredited pre-war intelligence on Iraq. Eight of the Democratic presidential hopefuls will debate tonight in South Carolina. It's the earliest presidential debate ever held. Next week, the Republican presidential candidates will meet in California for their first debate. In a standoff with NATO and the U.S. over plans to place a missile defense system in Eastern Europe, Russian President Vladimir Putin suspended his country's obligations under the Conventional Forces in Europe treaty. In Ankara, Turkey, there is progress reported in meetings between European officials and Iranian representatives over Iran's failure to halt its uranium enrichment program as required by the United Nations. In Istanbul, an eight-story building collapsed today while workers were trying to demolish a building next door. Two people were pulled out of the rubble by rescuers. Much of Colombia was out of power today as a blackout hit the country's commercial and industrial centers. Authorities say a technical failure caused the power outage, not a terrorist attack. New Hampshire lawmakers passed legislation today that authorizes civil unions for gay couples. The state's governor has previously said he will sign the law. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now. In 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission. Mary Knoll.
Texas lawmakers have prevented Governor Rick Perry from going ahead with his plan to require sixth graders to receive a controversial anti-cervical cancer vaccine. The Bush administration will extend $1 billion in housing aid to Hurricane Katrina and Rita victims. The world's largest retailer, Walmart, will cut 1,000 management positions at its Sam's Club stores as part of a restructuring plan to improve customer service. Ford Motor reports its seventh consecutive quarterly loss in a row. However, the latest amount narrowed to $282 million after thousands of jobs were eliminated and millions of dollars in spending were cut. The Japanese Prime Minister is meeting with President Bush today and tomorrow in Washington to discuss trade. Rupert Murdoch's News Corp will introduce the popular social networking website MySpace.com to China, which has the world's fastest growing internet market. Japanese video game maker Nintendo reports strong sales of its popular Wii game machine boosted its profits by 77% for the latest fiscal year. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.06 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow had another record close, up 16 points at 13,105. The Nasdaq was up 7 points, and the S&P 500 was down 1. There's always more at our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Ali Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour. That would be 6 o'clock here on the East Coast, 3 o'clock West Coast. Sometime yesterday or tomorrow in the rest of the planet. Hey, look, I'm just Bob Kincaid, okay? I'm not the clock guy. But I suggest that we pick up where we left off last night. There was something that I had mentioned I did not get to. And again, you know, some of this stuff I play because I think... Well, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I don't have that little hat with the little thing in the band that says press, like Larry and Moe. Curly had the one that said pull. But to the extent that, I don't know, is this stuff being pointed out in the lamestream media? By the professional journalists who do things like going to the White House Correspondents Association dinner
and clapping politely for Tony Snow. Oh, Tony, you're standing up there, you're so brave, you're eaten alive from the inside out, but you're so brave. You're evil, but you're brave.
I'm sorry, I watched a little bit of the White House Correspondents Association dinner footage. Rich Little, oh, poor man. It was just sad and lame and pathetic when you compare it against last year when Stephen Colbert... the Laura Bush, lovingly referred to by many as Pickles, appeared on the Today Show yesterday. And honest to God, I think she's been hanging out with that hateful old beast Barbara Bush a little too much lately. That or Consuela can't find her Librium and tequila anymore. Because she was asked about... here's the question. Well, never mind. Listen, let's just go to it. The reason I say the Barbara Bush part, I mean, you remember the Beautiful Minds comment. You know, why would I want to bother my beautiful mind by thinking about troop deaths? And then later on, we got the response to Katrina. You know, they're living here on cots in the Astrodome, and we're just afraid they're not going to want to leave Texas, and it's really working out very well for them. So now, Pickles Bush, the murderess, the woman who T-boned her estranged boyfriend back in the early 60s and got away with it, is addressing the issue of suffering and the war. on the Today Show on April 25th, yesterday morning. This is the relevant clip.
You know the American people are suffering, watching.
Oh, I know that very much. And believe me, no one suffers more than their president. And I do when we watch this. And certainly the commander-in-chief who has asked our military to go into harm's way.
Scream at will. Just let it get it all out, because if you bottle that stuff up inside, it'll eat you. You'll turn into Tony Snow. That's right. No one suffers more than Laura Pickles Bush. No one suffers more than George Bush. And that's, you know, that's what we finally find out, why George Bush can't go to the damn funerals. Because he's suffering too much already. The suffering would probably just overwhelm him, and he'd stand there and he'd probably just wet his pants at a military funeral or something. Yeah. Compare that. You know, and I found this over at the blog, at the post that Susan pointed out. This is a letter from Abraham Lincoln, November 21st, 1864. Dear Madam, I have been shown in the files of the War Department a statement of the Adjutant General of Massachusetts that you are the mother of five sons who have died gloriously on the field of battle. I feel how weak and fruitless must be any words of mine which should attempt to beguile you from the grief of a loss so overwhelming. But I cannot refrain from tendering to you the consolation that may be found in the thanks of the Republic they died to save. I pray that our Heavenly Father may assuage the anguish of your bereavement and leave you only the cherished memory of the loved and lost, and the solemn pride that must be yours to have laid so costly a sacrifice upon the altar of freedom. Yours very sincerely and respectfully, Abraham Lincoln. Go back to the clip again there, Agnes.
You know the American people are suffering, watching.
Oh, I know that very much. And believe me, no one suffers more than their president. And I do when we watch this. And certainly the commander-in-chief who has asked our military to go into harm's way.
It all just becomes so clear now, doesn't it? This is why George Bush can't meet with Cindy Sheehan. This is why Laura Bush can't meet with Cindy Sheehan. They're suffering too much.
Well, I have a question after listening to that again. Is the president the same as the commander-in-chief, or
you know,
is there someone different there?
I know. The question does, yeah, I know.
And she's a librarian?
She's a librarian.
That means she graduated from college?
She's also a Dimebag Laura from SMU.
Mm.
Yeah. Play it again. Let's just wear this out. Let's just beat this to pieces. Yeah.
You know the American people are suffering, watching.
Oh, I know that very much. And believe me, no one suffers more than their president. And I do when we watch this. And certainly the commander-in-chief who has asked our military to go into harm's way.
I'll tell you what, that runs the vomit factor up pretty high, doesn't it? And Ann Curry, you know, the little lapdog newsreader at NBC, doesn't even call her on it. It's hard. Of course, it's absolutely hard. Over 3,300 American families have been shattered irrevocably. They won't get better. Their loved ones have been stripped away from them in the pursuit of a war that is based on lies. And Laura Bush says, no one suffers more than their president, and I do. How about Pat Tillman's family? How about the hitch in the voice of Jessica Lynch when she mentioned Lori Piestwa, her best friend, a Hopi native, who died trying to keep her comrade Jessica alive? Well, the Piestois family doesn't suffer more than Laura Bush and George do. The Tillman family, who have been subjected to lies, deceptions, deceits, frauds, they don't suffer more than Laura Bush and George Bush do. Cindy Sheehan, who lost her beloved son Casey, who has been vilified by the right-wing press, a tragedy prostitute or something. Wasn't that what Glenn Beck called her? She doesn't suffer more than George Bush and Laura Bush do. Yeah, we're picking up where we left off last night. I'm sorry. Do George and Laura Bush even belong in something that we would refer to as civilized society? Do they? I mean, I'm just asking. This is proof positive of the stunning, stunning disconnect that exists between those nouveau riche, never worked an honest day in their life Bushes and the entire rest of the American nation. They don't get it. And they play with lives as though they were tinker toys or little dolls that they move about in their grand game. And it sickens me. It just sickens me. I haven't seen much in the way of backlash yet. I don't know if there would be or will be. But you wonder where those military families. I haven't even heard anything from Cindy Sheehan on this one. And I find it astonishing. No one suffers as much as the president and I do. See, that shows a sort of shallow, callow, mean-spiritedness. Because that's the way it is to be a Bush. You've got to be on top. Whatever you're doing, it's win, 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 win. Whether it's a croquet game at Kenny Bunkport or a question of honoring the families of the fallen, the Bushes must be the biggest, the best, or the worst, or the most grievously suffering. And it's kind of a sign of a pathological mindset, isn't it? I think so. I'll tell you what, we'll go ahead and take our break. The lines are open. You bring to the table what you want. I've got a stack, but I want to hear from you. I want to know what's bugging you. I want to know what it is today that has eaten through your soul, living in this world of right-wing Republican so-called conservative values. The phone number, of course, is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. That's toll-free. If you can make the call on your own nickel and you want to, it's 304-658-5453. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
First, let me make it very clear, poor people aren't necessarily killers. Just because you happen to be not rich doesn't mean you're willing to kill.
I'm trying to be less polite. I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool. I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite. I want to call a spade I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Almost everyone I've talked to says we're going to move to Houston.
What I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is they all want to stay in Texas. Everybody is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
I think that's Agnes's favorite song. Just for you, beautiful mind, Barbara Bush. Just for you, pickled mind, Pickles Bush.
No one suffers as much as the president and I do.
God, I mean, you ever been out in the woods and you're kind of cruising down the trail and you walk through a spider web and you spend the rest of the day just feeling like something's crawling all over you? That's what that did to me. I feel all crawly. Just like spiders and centipedes and stuff are just on my skin. I can't believe the inhumanity. Yeah, of course I can believe it. But this isn't a question of article. This isn't an article of faith. This isn't something you believe or don't believe. She said it. 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 I hope they do know the burden of worry that's on his shoulders every single day for our troops. And I think they do. I think that if they don't, they're not seeing what the real responsibilities of our president are. There we go, then! It's their fault! It's the grieving family's fault. They don't understand the responsibilities on the shoulders of the leader of the free world. They don't understand. God! Marie Antoinette had more empathy. At least she wanted the peasants to have cake. God Almighty. And of course, as they note over at Pensito Review, Ann Curry, lapdog, didn't bother to ask Mrs. Bush about the persistent rumors that she and George aren't exactly, I guess it's fair to say she's no longer his lump in the bed. What was that? Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm thinking of you, my lump in the bed. No, that would have been too much work for Ann Curry. She's there to draw her breath and her pay and throw softballs up there and smile politely when Laura Bush says that people who have had their loved ones destroyed in this filthy war don't suffer as much as George does. George is in bed by 9 o'clock every night, for God's sakes. Let's see, presidential schedule... 8:51 brush teeth, 8:52 wash face, 8:53 suffer, 8:54 footy pajamas, 8:55 story time, 9 o'clock out like a light. God Almighty. No one suffers. No one suffers more than their president and I do when we watch this. Agnes, we got to take a break. I'm sorry. We're going to take another break and come back. Okay, we're not. No, we're not. No, we're not.
Thank you.
I was seeing it was coming up to the bottom of the hour, and I thought we took a break at the bottom of the hour, but I guess we won't take a break. Yes, dear. No poking the den mother with a sharp stick. I understand.
I won't waste my beautiful mind on that. You'll get a break in a minute.
Oh, you'll get... Oh, yeah, 8:57, potty. Oh, I thought that's what the depends were for. This is going to be a weird one. And don't forget, I guess the only coverage is on MSNBC... The 90-minute Democratic presidential debate at South Carolina State University. Why we're having a presidential debate among the Democratic presidential candidates in April of 2007 for an election that's in November of 2008, I don't know. But I do know that I'm sitting here looking at the Associated Press coverage of it. One of his, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's rivals tried to set stakes, high stakes for her performance by sharing with a reporter a 1990 editorial in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Clinton, as First Lady of Arkansas, once turned a news conference staged by her husband's Republican challenger into an impromptu debate. The tougher Clinton went on to mop the marble floor with her husband's opponent, the newspaper contended. And this whole thing is about Obama and Hillary. Let's see. Way down there. Hello. This is what you get. Long shots like former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel and Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich would get just as much time to explain their views and their better-known rivals. That's it. That's the only mention Dennis Kucinich gets. This guy predicted the outcome of the war. He predicted the progress of the war. He knew the war was wrong. Way back, the nearly 4 years ago, he knew what was going to happen. He knew what was going to happen to our soldiers. He knew how they'd be left in the dust by the Bush administration once they'd served their purpose. Kucinich knew, Kucinich said. He knew what was going to continue to happen to our health care system that is broken. And he has stayed on point and on principle for all these years now. He's the only one who was 100% correct about the war. Knew there wouldn't be any weapons of mass destruction. Knew Saddam wasn't a threat. And stuck to his guns. And what does he get from the Associated Press? Long shots like former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel and Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich would get just as much time to explain their views as their better-known rivals. Jesus, he didn't even get top billing in the underbill. But that is coming up tonight, and I fully expect that the Congressman Kucinich will once again prove himself the smartest one of the bunch. Now, that is, of course, not to suggest that there will be any sort of fair or decent coverage of his remarks by the Associated Press, the New York Times, the Washington Post, or any the hell else body. Oh, no. No, what will... Senator Clinton delivered a stirring call for a cleanup of the video game industry. By the way, did you know that Dennis Kucinich is shorter than Hillary Clinton? That's what you'll get. I mean, the piece of garbage that was in the Washington Post, what, Wednesday? By Dana Milbank? I mean, Jesus, look up snark in the dictionary and Dana Milbank's picture is there. It was worse than Maureen Dowd. He talked about Dennis's height and his hair. Newsflash, Dana Milbank, if you're going to be a journalist and get them big-time journalism dollars, you might be better off writing about the actual contents of the bill of impeachment. Nope, that's too hard. That's too much work. So, I know it's not going to stream online or anything, so we can't bring you any audio of it as it happens. It's apparently, like I said, exclusive to MSNBC. So you guys, I don't know. What time is it? Is it 8 o'clock tonight or 9? So you guys will have to sort of update me as we go along. You know, it's been pre-scripted as a contest between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, with a few asides from John Edwards. What the latest polling numbers say that Barack and Hillary among likely Democratic voters are tied at 32%, and John Edwards is the next back at 17%. And for the life of me, I don't know why. Now, whoever, let's be clear on this. I'm not going to throw my vote away in November 2008. Whoever is the Democratic nominee for president, I will vote for. No Nader votes here. No protest Ron Paul votes. We are screwed, 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 screwed if Rudy Giuliani or John McCain or Sam Brownback or any of those other, oh God, Tom Tancredo, any of those freaks get into office. We're screwed. So I'm going to vote for whoever gets the Democratic nominee in 2008. But until then, I will continue to work for the one person that I believe can do the best job. Because I'm kind of an idealist that way. I believe that the political process should be a search for the person who can best accomplish those things that need to be done by the President of the United States. And that guy is very obviously, very clearly Dennis Kucinich, who can't even get a mention. I mean, this is beginning to be something like Rodney Dangerfield or Henny Youngman. Yeah, couldn't get a dinner. No respect. And I don't know why. There was a news story that came out today. Well, if you can call this news. Oh, no, it's journalism, Bob. American Idol recorded 63.5 million votes, the highest ever in the show's history. Lord God. And you know what? That vote tallying process for American Idol is probably actually, yeah, more reliable than the votes that were cast in November 2004. We know that for a fact now because of the data, the storm, whatever has been gathering. But a brilliant, brilliant article published in a number of places, among them the Free Press and over at truthout.org. Love Truthout. By Bob Fetrakis and Harvey Wasserman, headline, Are Rove's Missing Emails the Smoking Guns of the Stolen 2004 Election? I'm not even going to try to read any of this. Well, maybe a little bit. But it is blow by blow and piece by piece a dissection of Ohio in 2004. One remark, there remains another avenue by which the real outcome of Ohio 2004 could be discovered. Long-standing federal law protected Ohio's ballots and other election documentation prior to September 3, 2006. Kent Blackwell gave clear orders that these crucial records were to be destroyed on that date. Prior to the expiration of the federal statutory protection, a civil rights lawsuit was filed in the federal court of Judge Algernon Marbley, asking that the remaining records be preserved. The request was granted in what has become known as the King Lincoln Bronzeville suit. Thus, by a federal law, the actual ballots and electronic records should be available for the kind of exhaustive recount that was illegally denied or rigged, as prosecutors in Cleveland have put it, by Blackwell, by Bennett, and their cohorts the first time around. There may be an actual exhaustive recount to show who really did win the presidential election of 2004. Bob Fetrakis and Harvey Wasserman have authored How the GOP Stole America's 2004 Election and is Rigging 2008. And once again, everything comes back to, you know, some little seedy, dark, squirrely kind of place. In this particular instance, it is a series of servers in the basement of a bank in Chattanooga, Tennessee. where various and sundry websites are hosted, including GOP.org, cannonfire.blog, no, that's not it. GOP.org, among other other websites. I'm trying to read through this thing as I or find the place that I'd that I thought I had marked with these websites. But at any rate, everything, the missing email, they all passed through Chattanooga. They write, conflicts of interest in programming services and remote access capability appear throughout the RNC's computer networks, Rove's secret White House email, and the electronic vehicles used by Blackwell to finally reveal his official presidential vote counts for Ohio 2004. This is amazing stuff. Mike Connell, a Republican computer expert, helped create the software for both Ohio's official 2004 election website and for the Bush campaign's partisan website during the 2000 election. The success of Connell's GovTech solutions has been attributed by Connell to his being loyal to my network, including the Bush family. Oh, this is like a crime novel. Oh, the tentacles. According to a January 13, 2005 release from Cedarville University, a small Ohio-based Christian academy, Connell's GovTech solutions helped make the shared server system run like a champ through the early morning hours as users from around the world looked to Ohio for their election results. After 2 a.m., despite exit polls showing very much the opposite outcome, those results put Bush back in the White House. Now, wasn't that about the time that John Kerry was saying, I do not wish to contest the election. America must come together. Wasn't that about then? You know, there's a sort of a symbiotic relationship between the mugger and the muggy. If you just give in, you make the mugger's job a hell of a lot easier. All those missing emails, some of which are missing from precisely the point in time where the election was being stolen in Ohio, and we're supposed to just say, ah, you know, these things happen. I mean, you know, sometimes you lose 18 minutes of tape because Rosemary Wood stepped on the wrong dictaphone button, and sometimes you just lose 5 million emails. They're just, you know, they're just gone. These things, you know, they just disappear. If you were listening last week, you know that our good friend Peter Godbold explained it in some decent detail how that kind of thing can happen. In a word, that kind of thing doesn't just happen. But of course, you know what you'll hear from the mainstream media. You know what you'll hear from the professional journalists. You know what you'll hear from the right-wing freaks who still support this corrupt, this inept, this hopeless executive administration. Nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for. These are not the droids we're looking for. Nothing to see here.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
Yeah, George.
That we're going to have a draft. We're not going to have a draft, period.
Okay. Yeah, it's don't pay any attention to me. These are just rumors on the internets. Dig it. No, I was talking about the hosting site. Smart Tech CorpCorp.com, based in Chattanooga, Tennessee, as I mentioned. They host GeorgeWBush.com, MC.org, OhioGOP.org, and GOP.com, among other Republican web domains in a bank basement. The same hosting site that handled redirections from Blackwell's official site in Ohio also handled the White House email accounts that have become central to investigations of Gonzalez, the Gonzalez purge, Rove, all of the, yeah. Conflicts of interest in programming services and remote access capability appear throughout the RNC's computer networks, Rove's secret White House email, and the electronic vehicles used by Blackwell to finally reveal his official presidential vote counts for Ohio in 2004. Remember the guy who was behind this, Mike Connell. He attributes his success to being, quote, loyal to my network, unquote, and that includes La Familia Bush. It got stolen. We knew it was being stolen the day, anybody who was paying attention knew it was being stolen the day it was happening. And the guy who was in the best position of all, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that just it makes you want to weep. The guy who was in the best position of all to keep it from being stolen, and who had millions and millions of dollars still in his war chest, refused to fight. By God, if you refuse to fight and somebody has attacked you and you don't... No, I'm not talking about the... No, this is not kumbaya time. When the bully comes up and punches you in the gut, if you don't punch him right back in the nose, he is going to get you on the ground and stomp your guts out. And that is what the Republican Party and that whole filthy machine did to poor horse-faced John Kerry. It was pathetic. And we later heard how John Edwards was on the phone to him going, "Damn, John! Don't quit. Don't give it. You can't give in. People have busted their asses for you. They have bled and they have sweated and they have fought and they've worked. You can't just quit and walk away." Yes, I can. And he did. He could have been president of the United States of America if only he would have fought for it. What do you do? How do you respond when you catch somebody stealing from you? Do you get mad? Do you want to fight back? Or do you, well, if they can't live without it, I can. And now we find out. They stole it. Just like they stole Florida. These evil, corrupt bastards who cannot succeed by playing by the rules, stole Ohio and stole the nation. We could, you know, with Kerry in the White House, maybe we'd have been out of Iraq by now. I know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. If butts were nuts and wishes were candy, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
That man does tell the truth from time to time. You know, in the stack of stuff I've got here, I had the Bob Fetrakis story, and I had the thing from last night with the audio from Pickles. And it just, if you're not careful, it can make you just feel like everything is lost and there's nothing, no way to get it back, and there's no way to, and that we're all just screwed. Shut up, go along and get along and be a happy little consumer. Oh, what does Jackson Brown sing in The Pretender? "I'm going to be a happy idiot and struggle for the legal tender." And when the morning light comes streaming again, streaming in, I'll get up and do it again. Amen. Get up and do it again. That's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to be sitting there by your computer listening to some rambling conspiracy theory spouting left-wing, godless, atheist. No, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to be in Walmart. What are you doing? Get up, go to Walmart, be happy. They stole the election for you. It was for your own good. Why, they're suffering out there. George and Laura, they're suffering for you. They're just like Jesus. You ingrates, you liberals, you Democrats. To the phones we go, our good friend Albert calling in from Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob. How are you today?
I'm frustrated, man.
I know. How can you not be, honestly? It is simply amazing. Love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, these people, I'm telling you. But the Senate now passes that bill, and, obviously Bush is going to veto it, as he says, because he is as stubborn as it gets in terms of when he says something, he's going to do it. So, you know, we're going to have to deal with that.
Well, yeah, you know what?
I really ask. I mean,
I know, but so he vetoes it.
Yeah, he is going to veto it, and he's just going to continue with that.
Okay, well, we gave you a law. You vetoed it. You obviously didn't want the law. Now we're not going to pass a law. You deal with it, George. Why'd you do that to the troops?
Oh, it's the same. Well, it's the same thing back when he was saying how he wouldn't veto it, and the very next day he extends their tours. I mean, that was totally exposed on the Daily Show of all places, but, you know, that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who's been watching the Daily Show for the last 5 or 6 years. It's been like that, and it's going to continue to be like that because, you know, I was just watching Bill Moyers.
Yeah, the thing last night.
And it is just unbelievable to watch these people.
Well, I think that's kind of what put me in a little bit of a funk today, Albert.
Oh, I'm in a half funk because I only got to watch half of it so far. Because I just wanted to call you before it got too late and all that other stuff. Because, you know, you watch that, and then today, you watch. There's a clip out on Crooks and Liars. They're talking with, I think it's, what's his name? The guy, Brian Williams.
Yeah.
And Tim Russert. And, you know, Tim Russert, that guy just, he's just dirty. He just gives me, the creeps. Because
yeah.
He's one of the head cheerleaders there. I mean, the whole time these people, they told the line, they told the line, they told the line. Then when the poll, when the people of the United States start waking up to just the realities, just to the realities, they start waking up and the polls start really dipping against you. They're really showing the reflection that I believe has been there since day one. You know, they had that, you know, illusionary inflation after 9/11. You know, everybody wanted to do, you know, and be, and nobody wanted to hurt the president's feelings, and we had to get something done. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I'm all about people being able to change their minds, but there's a big problem when it comes to people that root for death and destruction and wanton murder. I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to live this down. We still haven't lived down Vietnam. So
well, that's why I said what I said last night, Albert, and I said it late in the program, and maybe it just slid by because I didn't hear anything about it. I'm beginning to wonder if we have to if we should leave Iraq. Maybe this is our punishment. Maybe this is our penance. Maybe this is what it takes for the American people to finally learn what Republicans do to them.
Yeah, and even I think you're right, and I think even on a broader aspect. I mean, what about our lifestyle? This is what our lifestyle is demanding. It's not you know an invisible gas, and now it's not you know imperceptible changes to the atmosphere and to places of the world that nobody visits, like Antarctica and the Arctic Circle. It's nothing like that. Now it's going to be you know your sons and daughters and your friends and your you know your loved ones that you know now where they're paying the price, and it's going to be images and continual threats of attack from people that. You know, our bombs sit there and murdered their families in front of them. And how can they forgive that? How would you forgive that? I mean,
I have no intention of it.
Yeah, and so our, you know, and that I think that directly correlates to our lifestyle. and the way we want to live. I mean, we've discussed this before. We're losing our bees because we have this monoculture of crops that, you know, we have to have these petrochemicals to fertilize them and to kill all the insects and just, you know, and eventually, I mean, we're our worst enemy. And I, you know, to sit there and, oh, you're an anti-American. Baloney, I'm an anti-American. I love this country because I love the potential we have. But to sit here and to get into this war after war after war, and really, really, my question is, if we were to do this and to pull the feeding tube out of the military media industrial complex like that, how long is a beast, as savage as though those people are, how long are they going to go without food? And what will they do to make us start feeding them again? And that's my big fear, and that's my big concern, because, as you know, I have twin daughters that, you know, they're young, and, you know, these things will happen over the next few decades, and what kind of world is this going to be? So, you know, I can agree with you. Yeah, all right, let's stay in Iraq, but you know what? Let's put our guns away. Let's start picking up shovels and Band-Aids and bandages and food and water and do... That's right, let's Band-Aids. Let's start doing this stuff. And, you know, taking care of what we got to take care of. Let's start trying to fix this mess. Let's start trying to build, like, sow seeds of peace instead of these seeds of hatred. We're never going to put out this fire with hoses with gasoline tanks on our back. You can't put out fire with fire like this.
How do you get that through? I mean, these people in the White House, you know, you hear phrases like bubble, words like bubble and then bunker mentality. You know, his own generals are telling him that there is no military solution to Iraq. We can just stay and keep bleeding.
Well, that's going to have to come from us, isn't it?
You ever seen that movie 7 Days in May, Albert?
No, I haven't, but I know I should.
Rent it. You'll just be sitting there drumming your fingers after a little while.
Yeah. Well, I was doing that with what was the one? The Good Shepherd.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I just rented that, so that's on that's probably going to happen tonight.
Yeah. Well, you'll sit and spin for a while on that one. It's really long, too. It's actually quite in-depth. I was impressed with Robert De Niro. I give him a prop on that one. But, I mean, but that is... it's going to be up to us. It's going to be up to us in a broad sense. And I'm not just saying this is up to us. Let's call and write. No, it's up to us to, like, really move to action. I mean, what kind of world do we want? And that's what the biggest question here is what kind of world do we want? How do we want to continue... How do we want to live in the future? Do we want to continue with these wars? Do we really, really want to do this? Or do we want to be the good guys? The good guys again. I mean, they're like the real good guys and really do these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we want, isn't it?
Yeah, the mean guys.
Yeah, we don't want to be mean guys.
No, we don't want to be mean guys. Yeah. It sounds like you've got them well on the way.
I'm trying. And that's because that is the future, and you know, that's another thing, you know, all you liberals out there, you've got to start having kids because these conservatives have plenty of them. So you
oh yeah, they're out. They're out there having. You know, we've talked about it on the show, Albert. These weirdo right wing fascist fake Christian outfits that are encouraging little Republican mommies to breed like rabbits.
Yeah,
they're gonna. You know, they intend. You know, they've got it laid out. They are. You know, you said think about what kind of future we want. They already have.
Well, they want Jesus to come, and then, you know.
And until he does, they'll do his job for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I ran across something here today, again, that just made my head spin. There's a guy who sits in the House of Representatives out in Oregon who sends out these little, you know, email notes to his constituents and so forth. And this is... It's almost too much to believe, but this is a direct quote. The guy's name is Representative Dennis Richardson of Oregon, and he sent out this little newsletter that says, "A tragic week in review." Okay, this past week has been like no other. On Monday, the world witnessed the tragedy at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. On Tuesday, Oregon witnessed the passage of domestic benefits for same-sex couples and civil rights based on sexual orientation. They're the same. They're the same. Letting one person who loves the other person, no matter their gender, or have benefits or insurance, that's the same as the Virginia Tech slaughter.
These people are ghouls, Bob. They're ghouls. putrid ghouls. They're unbelievable. It is unbelievable. I mean, they will take any tragedy and run with it and run with it and run with it.
Well, you know, years and years and years when I walked out of my first viewing of Dawn of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
you know, the nice thing about a horror movie is you can walk out of it and you can go, well, I got all that out of my system, and thank God it's not real. It's real.
It's real. There's zombies out there. There are a lot of zombies out there, and I think that's why zombie movies, the whole genre of horror, I think that's why, you know, the symbology behind it, that's why they keep making them. And because it is a good, it's a good way. There's so many different symbolisms that you can have within it. There are zombies out there. I mean, there's still 31%. 31% diehard. 31%, the backwashers, Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
And I love it because it is, and it's sad. And I don't know what it is that they want, if it's this phony tough, phony brave, phony nonsense of, you know, I don't know what it is in terms of this, you know, the suffering. I mean, the suffering that continues to go on. I mean, like, for you not to be touched by it is for you to not pay attention to it. And as we, that is the path of least resistance to most people. And it's really easy to do that, but, you know, like, because these people choose this path of least resistance, you know, it's going to burn out our civilization. It's going to get too much, and there's going to be too much of a load, and eventually, like, it, you know, I just got Chalmers Johnson Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. And I'm really looking to get into it because he did kind of, you know, he really brought up that whole point of blowback. And, you know, in his earlier work where, you know, like, we're out there doing these dirty, 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 disgusting, horrible things in the name of freedom, in the name of democracy, in the name of all these things that, you know, we hold as values, where it doesn't work like that. You can't sit here and overthrow democratically elected governors in Iran and then set up a kingdom. And you can't sit there and then, you know, create like slave labor places in places like China and Cuba and then all these other things that we do and don't expect that one day there is going to be a price to pay. And I know as Americans, we're really, really, really super spoiled on using credit. It just, you know, oh yeah, well, I'm going to pay for it now, I'll pay for it later. And the thing is do we really, really want to pay this price? Do you really want to pay the price of that? Do you want to pay the price that we're going to sit there the more we procrastinate? You know, eventually graduation day will come to us all. It will. Graduation day it comes no matter what. And if you sit around and cut class and don't do nothing and, you know, you don't take tests and you don't worry about reading, you know, what's going to happen on graduation day? You're going to be behind and you'll be there for another few summers. And nobody wants to pay that price, you know, but they don't know. It's like that's the whole point of you. And anyone else that's out there going to try to at least enlighten somebody to the truth is that we have that ability that we see that the price that's going to come from this isn't even going to be it's not something worth paying. It's not worth paying to sit here and have what we have now, because what we have now is all going to this whole debt. It's like this country is going to Vegas with a credit card. That with an unlimited credit card. That's what it's like. They're playing roulette.
We're junkies on a binge.
It's unbelievable. We're Bill Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unbelievable. We can't continue doing what we're doing in any way, shape, or form. And you know, the more the world sits there and tells us this, the more the environment sits there and tells us this. I mean, we've talked about this so many times. The world hates us. Hates. I don't know how many people I know that they go overseas. They're Canadians, not Americans. I mean,
oh,
Canadians.
No, I'm not American, eh?
Exactly. No, you know, I sewed this maple flag on my, you know, on my backpack. You know, I'm not American. I just look like them.
See, I'm not American. I say who's.
I say who's and a boot.
Right.
You know, what's baseball? I play hockey. You know, it's sad. It really is sad. And I just, my biggest fear is what happens to the beast when we stop feeding it.
Well, but, and I know what you're talking about, because they will do, the idea of a society based on law, will go out the windows when the privileged, when these people who think that they are on the fast track to privilege realize that they're not. And they will steal, they will lie, they will kill, Albert. They will kill.
Oh, yeah. 3,000 people is nothing to them.
And they'll say things like, yeah, because after all, you know, there's no such thing as evolution and all that the horse hockey that they ascribe to. They will say such things as, of course we deserve to live. It's survival of the fittest.
Yeah, social Darwinism. That, yeah, they totally embody and will totally run to that whole that little paradigm of social Darwinism, but then throw out the biological Darwinism.
Right.
It's unbelievable. I can't believe the kinds of people that. I mean, I'm just glad I don't have television because I couldn't afford to keep replacing them, Bob.
Yeah, the Elvis gun moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's no way. I mean, I watch through the internet. You know, and it's like I click on these clips to choose to watch them because I want to be aware of what these people are saying, you know. But like, I hate to, you know, tout my own horn a little bit, but you know, I called this where we are today. I called this years ago, and I sat there and I told my friends and family and loved ones that this and anyone that would even make eye contact with me on the street, this is where we're going. But you really want to go this? This is where we're going. Watch. And this was back when, you know, when Bush was at 90%, which is ridiculous. Only Stalin and Saddam get 90% approval. So, you know, it's a growing sadness that I hope, even to our bloated politicians on our side, I do hope that they really seriously wake up. I mean, you gave some news from some troglodyte in Oregon, but there are some good things in Oregon. Is it the mayor of Portland? He's trying to live a week on food stamp money, so he's going to go to the store and he's going to eat $21 worth of food on a week to see how it is to live like someone who needs that kind of money. You know, that's what we need more of. We need these people.
Yeah, dig that. We feed our soldiers $29. We pay $29 a day to feed our soldiers. We give a poor American $21 a week.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the sacrifice that they're talking about.
Well, that's an incentive to join the military.
Isn't it? Oh, hey, we can't have the draft.
You can quintuple your food allotment if you only stay alive. That's really the key to the benefits program, not getting killed.
Yeah. It's a hard thing. And then while that's happening, and we that's not treating anybody right either. Paying them $29 a week isn't really much better, you know. But we treat our troops and besides fodder. I mean, that's just it's always been that way.
Remember that $29 a day. It's not like the soldiers had a per diem. Okay, that was paid directly to Halliburton. And how many times has Halliburton gotten busted for things like rotten meat and rotting vegetables in their kitchens, just serving garbage to our service personnel?
What about water with worms in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can visibly see worms in the water, the things that you can't see are that you really don't want to know, and that's not something you want to consume. I mean, that's kind of where we get to the Halliburton, Keller, Braun, and Root, Khaki, all these other guys. I mean, we have, 150,000 troops, and they're going to jack up a few more of them. But we also have, over 180,000 mercenaries. You know, some of them, not all of them are fighters, but there's a large portion of them that are. Now, these people, like, you know, that they come from, you know, Chilean dictators, School of America's taught, you know, middle Latin American commandos.
Old apartheid knee breakers, sure.
Exactly. And now these people that have no law, no anything else like that, they run around. And, you know, like, this is in turn, you talk about supporting our troops, well, I'll tell you what, then we need to remilitarize the military. We need to get this privatization out of there because these contractors, it's documented. It's on video. They hate themselves doing this. They snipe people from roofs. They'll drive around and just shoot at people. And, you know, like, they're doing that, and they're not marked. They're nothing like that. And they're creating. I mean, you know, it makes me go, oh, please. you know, all these people that, you know, like in Iraq that are, you know, these things that dwarf Virginia Tech, you know, when there's, you know, 80 people found, you know, execution-style killings where they got the zip ties behind their back and boom, 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 and there's just 83 people dead found throughout the streets. Who, I mean, yeah, all right, maybe some Sunni militias are doing, maybe some Shia militia. Who knows who's doing this? But maybe these contractors are doing this too, because they need this tension there. They
sure.
need us. They need the people to go, oh, look at all this horror. We have to help these people. And then our good intentions pave the road to hell. And that's what we constantly see. We need people in this world, in this country, to educate themselves and educate their children, to really know how to pay attention to this stuff. Because we're going to just continue this vicious pattern over and over.
So,
and over.
Albert, what do you think happens? The bill goes up to George. George vetoes it. It comes back, and he says, now give me a clean bill, like I told you to the first time. Will they? Will they knuckle at that point? Was it all just symbolic? Was it a
exactly.
sop thrown to the anti-war crowd? Well, we tried.
Yeah, we tried, but, you know, and I do believe. I mean, this is just my own little, like, you know, all right, whatever happens, happens. But I'll tell you, my belief in terms of what is going to happen is we are not leaving Iraq. We are not. It won't happen. And as I said, the beast will need to be fed. And they will do whatever it takes. And if it's not Iraq anymore, it'll be Iran. That's why the drum beats are there. It'll be something else. And, you know, Iraq will become the Afghanistan. Because, I mean, what we lost, I don't even know how many men we lost in Afghanistan last week. It was a lot, though. Because that's starting to ramp up again. Because, you know, we are doing things that we shouldn't. We're like beekeepers without a bee suit. Or a smoke canister. It's just unbelievable the kinds of things that we think we can accomplish, you know, with our muscles. When our love, I mean, you know, like our the things that we could be versus the things we are, it's a disgusting paradigm. It really is. I mean, to think that, you know, people get this savage pride, this caveman pride mentality of that, you know, we're tough, we're number one, USA, USA, USA. No, you don't understand. We're not number one in so many categories that really count, that really
matter. Yeah, infant mortality.
Exactly. Reading comprehension.
Postpartum death.
Press freedom. We can go down the entire list, and it would just, I mean, it's appalling. 56th for press. I mean, we're behind Zimbabwe or one of those African countries for child mortality rate. I mean, it's only going higher. I mean, this is like 2 years ago, and it's only getting higher and higher and higher. We're sinking down and down and down to this point. We don't manufacture anything anymore. We all we do is export resources to China. I mean, or even our bottles to make our fleece. You know, we don't even recycle things here anymore. We ship it across the sea. We don't do nothing anymore. And it's sad, and it's really sad. And then I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to have a nice little meal with my kids, and I'm reading what they pass for a newspaper around here, and I see how the Dow is at 13,000. Now, you know I have a history in the stock market, okay? I used to work on them Wall Streets. Now, I'll tell you something. Our stock market's at 13,000. It's a record. No, but, you know, you don't understand. The dollar is only like 70 cents. Okay, in order for the dollar to be a dollar and for that 13,000 to really be worth 13, it would have to be really at in inflated terms at 15,000 in order to be even and to where it should be.
Well, the stock market's been, I mean, isn't it true, Albert, that starting with Reagan and the turn away from real pensions into these 401ks and it was an artificial inflation of the value of the market.
Oh, without question. I mean, we don't have time to list these overinflated companies throughout the last two decades. We don't have time.
And it goes into CEOs' pockets.
Exactly. I mean, and what's going to happen to the market once we pull these troops out of Iraq and Halliburton and Khaki and all these, and Blackwater aren't getting their contracts anymore? What's going to happen to these? Because these are now the sweet boys to have in your fund, in your portfolio. What's going to happen to it? Well, Halliburton stock has gone up what? How much? 600% or something ridiculous like that. You know, Caliber on the roof. Same thing.
Yeah, you remember when the right wingers screamed about how the economy of the 90s was all faked up and dummied up because of the tech bubble and that it was artificial because all the dot-coms weren't really doing anything and people were investing in it anyway. Well, you know, isn't this a war bubble?
Yeah. Exactly. You pulled those minds. That's telepathic communication right there. Indeed. It's a war bubble. It's a war bubble, pure and simple. And
it's a blood bubble.
It's a blood bubble. Ew, it's a sucking chest wound bubble. And those don't last very long, do they?
And, yeah, and they make a real mess when they pop.
It is a mess. But that's the thing. That's the difference with us. We see this bubble. We see this happening. We want the pressure. We want to put the pressure bandage on.
Well, that's why I told this. That's why I told the story the other night of how I've come to. We have passed our despise, our loathing of Republicans from generation to generation in this family, Albert, because it's. Yeah, there is. It is honorable to be in business. Okay, business can be honorable. Small business owners, shopkeepers, the people who have ideas and are trying to put something out into the marketplace based on their blood, sweat, toil, and tears. That's honorable. And my grandfather was there, 35 years old, kept an entire community alive until Republican policies destroyed him. And those are the people who suffer, and we and that generation's gone. It's the old line from my grandmother where she said, you know, the Republicans promised us three meals a day and they came through. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal.
Miss a meal, indeed. And that's nothing. It's so obvious they're trying to wipe out the middle class and have their serfdom. I mean, these guys are, we call them fascists and this and that, but they're like an oligarchy, and they want their...
They're medievalists.
Yeah, they want their fiefdoms, and they'd love it. They'd love it to have us all in food lines. And that's the sad thing. I mean, what do you think's going to happen? These are all pieces to the whole picture, because that's the nice thing about this show is I can come on here and I can discuss, the wide range, because it's a giant picture. We can't just discuss, the bill and just talk about the bill and the bill and the bill, because we also have to talk about the war and all this other stuff. We have to also talk about the bees.
Yeah.
We have to talk about that, because that's going to feed
everything is part of it.
Indeed, exactly, and that's why I love your show.
If it's linear, we're missing the picture. We're not even in the movie theater. If we're thinking in linear terms, it's got to be like a web. I mean, that's why we call it the internet. It's a web. It's not the worldwide line.
Yeah, we need holistic solutions. We need the whole picture, and we need to do this in its entirety. I mean, it's a good thing when we hear about New York City wanting to become the red apple with the worm in it. I was a kid, that was their emblem. It was an apple with a worm in it. Now they want to be a green apple, and they want to be and that's a good thing, and I hope that sets a precedent in terms of people awakening throughout the country, because we don't just need the cities to be green. We need our farmlands to be green, because if our farmlands aren't green, there is no city. There is no, don't worry about it. Who cares about, the stock market and the Dow Jones and however they inflate it this way or that way. There isn't any of that. We're in Iraq sitting here fighting over, we're over there for oil. We're over there. Who's going to try to honestly, with a straight face, say we're over there for their freedom? Please. We're not over there for their freedom.
Is anybody actually buying that anymore?
I hope not, because it takes that word freedom, just like they've ruined and dragged the word liberal through the mud. They've taken the word freedom and democracy and dragging it through the mud. I mean, it's an expansion of our empire, and it is. In the Roman days when we had a military base somewhere, the Roman Empire owned that place. They got tribute from that place. That was part of their empire, and then the bigger your empire is, the more you have to be. And I love our troops. I was a troop. I did these things. I support them, and I want them to come home. And then I would really love for us to we should always have a military, but in terms of a standing army, no. Even the founding, don't bring up the founding fathers and just, it's the same thing. They do the same thing with the founding fathers. They do the same thing with Jesus or Muhammad. They take these things and they take these people and these figureheads and they. Just pick and choose what they want in order to justify what they really want, which is, serfs and slaves. And they love all that stuff. They want that stuff. They want that stuff to come back. They want us to be so poor that we will work for minimum wage. And we will try to maintain this sense of, Eventually, one day, we're going to look like China.
There was almost no coverage whatsoever during the bill debate a couple of months back when in the Senate an amendment was introduced by the Republicans to eliminate. You know, remember the minimum wage debate?
Yeah,
that was a million years ago. But honest to God, they introduced an amendment, the Republicans did, to eliminate the minimum wage altogether. Mainstream, you know, my God, how is that not news? How is that not something to blast from the rooftops? But, you know, what did we get from ABC, CBS, NBC, all that crowd? We got crickets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we need a holistic approach in terms of attacking this beast. You know, because we do have to go. It is a military industrial media complex. They own the media. They tell the media. They crack their whip. Boom. The media jumps. The media bows. The media raises their hand. The media doesn't ask questions. And then they let in people like Jeff Gannon into the press corps.
And of course, you know, in anticipation of the Bill Moyers piece last night, O'Reilly was out there taking his marching order. Did everything short of calling Moyers a commie.
Oh, Moyers is a conservative, isn't he? At least that's how I've heard Moyers describe himself.
Well,
conservative, and I don't have a problem with someone that's a real, in terms of, you know, if someone's real and they're good, then if someone's real and they're good. They might have a different viewpoint in terms of this or that. However, people like Bill O'Reilly, he's not a conservative. Those people aren't conservatives. They're oligarchists. They're elitists. I mean, they talk about, you know, and I don't mean in terms of elite as being the best. I mean as elite in terms of having the most money and power.
Yeah.
You know, that's how they are elitists. That's why, you know, they're just.
Let's see. As we think back, I mean, mentioning O'Reilly, great quote from him. This is from January 29th, 2003. I will bet you the best dinner in the Gaslight District of San Diego. That military action will not last more than a week. Still hasn't been called on it.
He's never called.
I know.
He never called on nothing. I mean, even in the groups that do call him, like even Media Matters and those kinds of groups, they're the fringe left extremist left wingers.
Funded by George Soros, who hates Jesus and America at the same time.
Oh, we gotta rid ourselves of these socialist freaks. Yeah, these people are something else, man.
These liberals, everybody will smell like patchouli.
Oh no! Yeah, it's a funny little world, but it's also a very scary. It's actually a very scary world, and the fact that we are getting it is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. That, you know. That means we need to behave more. That means we really need, and we have to. I mean, they talk about accountability. Well, prove it. You know, prove this accountability. I'm so interested to see what happens with these Democrats and, you know, in our majorities in the houses. I really want to see what happens with this veto. You know, and I want to see if there are maybe hopefully. I mean, they talk about, you know, setting a deadline. You know, but. They really talk this kind of nonsense in order to, you know, fear us. Like, what was Rudy Giuliani? He's over here talking about how we're never going to be safe with a Democratic president. Only he can keep us safe with, you know,
because
he's...
Because we're never going on defense again.
Oh, my God.
Did you catch that part of it?
James.
They can't even use their own language. We're never going on defense again. Okay, so we'll just sit here naked, Rudy, and wait for the next one.
Take this $412 billion that we've spent thus far and, you know, write that off because we're never going to see that again. And then, you know, if we're going to continue to spend, let's spend that money at a pace for four more years. Let's spend that money at a pace and that we do secure this country without eroding civil liberties, without real ID acts and all this nonsense that they want to do in terms of, you know, and, you know, to do these... And I hate to say it, the John Birch Society type things where, you know, where these guys come out, they want to chip us all. Well, they do. They want to do this. I mean, Rockefellers, all this stuff, they want to do this kind of stuff to us. And, you know, we need to...
because we can't be trusted.
Oh, no, they can't be trusted. Oh, absolutely not. But this is why we need this responsibility. We need this stuff. I am so close to just wanting a national lottery for representatives. We should maybe even make another house. Let's build an addition to the Congress where we have an elected,
It was based on a Roman model anyway. Let's do the plebs. the House of Plebs.
The House of Plebs.
And, you know, do a national lottery and some dude from under the bridge can be part of it.
Hey, they do make up the country.
Yeah, they do. Well, no, I'm not being a smart aleck about it.
I'm with you.
In interesting political philosophy. Some of it I agree with, some of it I don't. But in Robert Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, where the professor therein posits how to set up a government. He said, you know, you want it based on where you live? How about based on, you know, how about representation based on what trade you're in? Or how about representation that is based entirely on nothing more than age? I mean, there's a million ways to do it.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, we've come up with this notion that our model is the model for the world, and therefore it has to work in Iraq. And you know what? To a certain extent, the Bush administration, Albert, is succeeding because the Iraqi government's getting a little bit more like the Bush administration every day. Did you see where the UN was criticizing them for dummying up the civilian death numbers and not even dummying them up, just not being willing to turn them over?
Well, I mean,
do you think they figured that out on their own?
Well, it's a child of the Bush administration. And that's what the Iraqi people themselves, you know, all the people that I mean, there are other blogs out there like Burning River, what's her name? Yeah, Bending River, Bending or River, whatever her name is. She, I think, is a good pulse to put your thumb on and sit there and go, okay, well, this is how the Iraqis feel. The Iraqis don't trust their government. They know that they're American puppets. I mean, if we were to leave, I think that we would that Baghdad would fall way faster than Saigon did back in the day.
Sure, it
would. It took an hour to take over the whole country. If we were to leave, it would be like 5 minutes. I mean, I think that's how bad it's getting in Iraq. It's getting. I mean, we had this surge. All the surge is doing is ramping up the fire even more. And you know, like, we don't have these troops out there. I mean, we don't have the troops to do this.
And still you got David Petraeus up on Capitol Hill saying, well, you know, it may get a little bit worse before it gets a little bit better.
Right. Well, how much...
For this, he gets stars?
Yeah. That's career military people, and that's that whole warning once again. You know, that's the beast right there. And we're sitting here looking at this. I mean, I think our best offense would really be goodwill. I really do believe this. And I don't mean, you know, goodwill doesn't count as, you know, taking these, you know, these fringe groups in these certain countries that have resources or strategic locations that we want and then training them how to fight and be, you know, do car bombs and do all this stuff and spend billions of dollars doing this. That's not goodwill. Goodwill is, you know, feeding and clothing.
Hey, goodwill is also not sneaking crap into Iraqi law that tells people that tells farmers that have been raising, you know, their own versions of heirloom wheat, their own varieties of wheat, you know, for 5,000 years, that now they have to get their wheat seed from Monsanto every year.
Amen, Bob.
You know, that's there. They did that.
Yeah, I know, and it is, and that's where we go. The holistic approach. We need the whole picture. Because we don't get the whole picture, and if we don't have the whole picture, we don't know where we're going. And these companies that, you know, like Monsanto and all this GMO Frankenfoods and all these other, it is such, and we're just finally starting to see, I believe we're starting to see the repercussions now. I mentioned this earlier. I mean, you know, these GMO foods are giving liver failures, and diabetes is on the rise. Like, it's
yeah, I just found that out.
Yeah.
I had my physical, and the doc looks at me and goes, "And you're borderline diabetic." And frankly, I'm not surprised. I mean, I've become a label reader But I'm convinced that a big part of that is high fructose corn syrup. But you know, that makes me sound like, you know, I think there's black helicopters outside and I got my tinfoil helmet on. But you know, this is a form of sugar that they have to use a process that's more complex than cracking gasoline out of crude oil.
Yep.
To crack this stuff out of number 2 field grade corn.
Yep. Yeah, they grow it all over the place around here.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you were to go in and swipe a few ears and put it in the pot and boil it, hey, kids, we're going to have corn on the cob.
You don't eat that stuff. That tastes like, I don't even want to mention on the radio what it tastes like.
It's awful.
It is. It's bitter and nasty, but it's got the molecular compounds that they need in order to get what they want, in order to have it very cheaply, and put it in everything. And you know, like I am a label reader myself, and like there are certain things that will not go into the body of my children, where maybe I'll eat it a little bit, but still won't go into my body, and certainly won't go into their body. And the one thing that I really try to avoid, the one hoop I'm always trying to jump through, is the high fructose corn syrup, and then corn syrup, and then more corn
syrup solids. Well, again, yeah. In his marvelous, marvelous book from a little over a year ago, Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma. I mean, this thing has achieved Olympian status on my bookshelf. Okay,
yeah.
He comes to the conclusion at the end of his first section that in essence, the American people eat two things: we eat corn and crude oil. Because if you take that holistic view of the food chain, that is damned well exactly what we're eating, Albert.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know what the interrelationship is, but because, well, ever since I was a tiny, tiny child, I've been hypoglycemic. Okay, every now and then it'll, you know, just the sweat and the shakes and, you know, gotta eat some sugar. You know, somebody for the love of God give me a cracker, that kind of thing. So I had that happen the other day. And I thought I'd be smart about it, went and grabbed me a banana and got the jar of peanut butter. I thought, you know, bang. Well, I mean, peanut butter always makes it go away, that or a glass of orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I've wolfed this thing down, then I turn around and I read the label on my jar of Jif. It's peanut butter, for the love of God. No, it's not. Peanuts, partially hydrogenated palm and soybean oil. What the hell is partially hydrogenated palm and soybean oil doing in my peanut butter?
I don't know.
What food chemist out there said, well, you know, this is... I mean, is it about shelf life? Is it about it being able to survive a nuclear blast? I mean, what the hell is it for?
You know what it's for? I'll tell you exactly what it's for, Bob. It's to inflate the stock market. It's to make their shares of these obscure chemical companies bigger. Because now they have... Now, instead of taking... You're eating Jif. I don't buy that stuff. Even though it's $2.50 and it's very cost-effective to buy it, it's really not in the long term. This is what we were talking about earlier.
Well, when George Washington Carver did 122 things you can make with the sweet potato and 98 you can make out of a peanut, one of them was not peanut butter, but it was, you know, next up, the soybean. You know, next up, palm kernels. What the hell is this?
It should be next up hemp seed, but at the same time, we need to sit here and really look at this in terms of, you know, don't buy no more Jif. That's it. You're not allowed.
No.
I mean, from now on, it's a peanut butter, like all peanut butter. This is all it should
peanuts,
be.
Peanuts, salt.
Salt. Salt. That's it. And if you don't want the salt, don't add the salt and just have peanuts. And that is the best tasting peanut butter.
Yeah, it is.
Period.
Get
away from it.
My dad used to do something for the kids that they absolutely loved. He'd buy that Smucker's all-natural peanut butter, you know, and the label says peanuts, salt. You know, it's got the oil on the top, you know, and that's why they have to use the trans fats and the partially hydrogenated, so the oil won't come up, because we as Americans are too damn lazy to stir the peanut butter.
Hey, Bob, real quick.
Yeah?
Real quick, you don't have to stir it. All you have to do is turn the jar upside down.
Well, that's true, too. But I'm an American, dude. I'm too lazy to do that. Okay? But what my dad would do, and I don't know if you've ever tried, it's delicious. Dump it all out in the bowl, scrape it all out, put it in a bowl, and mix it up with wheat germ.
Mm.
And it adds a new level of nuttiness to the peanut butter. And you know, boy, you want to talk about something good going through your insides. Yeah, it's
oh, yeah.
A1
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, Albert. And I love this conversation because it is wide ranging and it is going all over the place. You know, God knows if this was going out over terrestrial radio and somebody was in his car, he'd feel like he'd probably be convinced he was on acid. Because, you know, you start out with the war, and now we're on peanut butter. But you know what? It's all part of it.
It is. It really is.
You know, I think about when we were dropping those packages on Afghanistan with the peanut butter and crackers in it that were surprisingly similar to the bomblets from the MIRVs or whatever it is we were dropping at the same time. You know. What a case of Russian roulette. Is it going to be, am I getting post toasties or am I just getting toasted? But we were dropping trans fats on Afghanistan.
Trans fats, that we either kill them slowly or we kill them immediately. That's how we do it.
You know, do we drop the cardiologists next?
Yeah, right. We got to keep those for ourselves. Yeah. We're like the unscrupulous bankers in a Monopoly game. No, one for you, five for me. Yeah, it's
bank error in your favor. I never get that card.
Yeah, boy. Well, next time drop peanuts in a grinder, maybe in a block of salt. That would go over a little better.
Oh, hey, I've got a killer food process, but they make little peanut butter machines out there, and we've got these wonderful little cottage industries here in West Virginia where people in their kitchens just jar stuff up. I bought a jar of cashew butter and a jar of almond butter. You know, it was like $6 a jar. You know, little bitty jar too. But Agnes had to pry it out of my fingers. I was down to the point of, screw the spoon, I'm just going in with my thumb. Oh, God, it was so good.
Oh, it is. At the little co-ops that we have out here, they just put the nuts in the machine, and they have a little grinding machine, and you just basically can get it pure, straight up fresh, and then they also have it in bulk where you can just scoop it up, put it in, and you can just put it in a jar if you want or what have you. But, yeah, that stuff, almond butter.
And it's almost perfect food between that and the banana, you know?
Yep, indeed. Oh, don't talk about, you can't talk about the banana in a perfect food anymore, because then I get that Kirk Cameron and that other creationist little video. Have you ever seen that online?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that, yeah.
You just had, thanks for the help.
Hey, you put the image in my head, I have to put it back.
Well, it's fair enough, but I'm really trying hard. I'm out there. I've been doing what the doctor said. I'm trying to change the way we approach things because, yeah. You know, we've been so myopically focused on making the horn go that one or the other or both of us, Agnes and me, are in here in the studio practically 16 hours a day.
Wow.
And the doc looked at me and said, "Dude, you can do that, but it's going to kill you."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm an educated, intelligent guy, and I like to think that when I'm told something like that, I can process the information and act on it. But I know that something nefarious is going on because I got real serious real quick and started reading labels, and okay, there's trans fats in that, and I'm not going to eat it, and too much salt, and oh my God. And by, you know, I looked at Agnes on Monday, and I said, honest to God, it was Tuesday. I said, I feel homicidal.
Well, I'll tell you what. I kind of jumped on where you're at a few years ago in terms of especially being conscious in terms of what I'm eating. And I slipped. I've regressed a few times. I've gotten off the wagon. And then I always jump on because it really is a difference. And where I'll just say, you know, Bob, the food that the organic foods and the real organic foods, I mean, you know, this, because it says organic now, you can't even trust that totally, but the real organic foods, you can't afford as much of it, but it is so delicious and it is so good for you just based on just its simple ingredients that it's not so processed that, you know, it will heal you because what you put in your body, you know, is really important.
Food is medicine.
Yeah, it is medicine. And so if you're going to eat food, eat good food. Yeah, you might not be able to eat as much, but hey, then you lose a little bit of weight.
Well, for me, around here, the biggest problem is finding it. Because it really hasn't caught on yet, except to the extent of what we pull out of our own gardens. And I've got to have a garden. If I don't have fresh tomatoes, I will become homicidal. But you know, this is the kind of stuff that occupies my mind when I'm not thinking about like politics and society and stuff. I was thinking today, you know, in a couple of months, I'll make my own sourdough bread. I'll pull a tomato out of my garden. I'll pull some lettuce leaves out of the garden, and I will have a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. And the only thing I'm not responsible for is the bacon. And then I go click, and I find out hogs fed poisoned rice meal.
Uh-huh, poisoned wheat meal. And then not only that, it's what they're jacked up with, all the antibiotics they're jacked up.
Oh, sure. But the thing is, the story that I read, Albert, was very generic. It said hogs in the Carolinas. Okay. Now, because we're labor oriented here, we've talked a lot about the labor action down at the Smithfield meatpacking plant. I think it's the largest in the country, at Tar Heel, North Carolina, where 32,000 hogs are slaughtered per day. Okay, it's almost criminal what they do to the workers there.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and that's why I worried when I saw hogs in the Carolinas, because, you know, I know it's not some hog out at Uncle John's farm.
Yeah.
It's probably, you know, it's somewhere like Tar Heel. And the thing is, if that stuff has showed up in the feed for those hogs, again, I repeat the number, Albert, 32,000 hogs a day.
Yeah. Well, Bob, you know you got to vote with your dollars.
Oh, yeah.
If you do have a local butcher that actually you know, then you ask him if he's got the meat hooks outside and all that stuff, and he slaughters the...
No, see, we don't have any of those anymore.
Don't have that. Wow. Ooh.
And if you go to an independent meat shop, which I do from time to time still, I went looking for a standing rib roast at this one place because it's my favorite, you know, guilty pleasure in beef.
Uh-huh.
I said, you know, can you give me... He goes, with the bone in? I said, yeah, with the bone in. And he goes, oh man, they don't even offer to sell us anything with the bone in anymore.
What?
Yeah, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see.
And everything comes to them vacuum shipped from some outfit in Nebraska, and you know the cow has lived on one of these feedlot, you know, bovine Auschwitzes.
Yes, indeed. Good word.
You know, up to their forelocks in fecal material. You know,
yeah.
that's why we have the E. coli problem.
Oh, indeed.
Because
oh,
yeah. The cattle are living in poop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if your cow, you ever seen a cow? Well, you live in Wisconsin, for the love of God. Of course you have. Happy little cow out wandering in the field. You know what? They're kind of slow and stuff, but cattle don't deliberately walk through poop.
No, they don't like they don't like it, and it's they really you can see what you can tell like if sometimes the farmer's a little lazy, and that like he won't quite move the cows, and they're not happy at all, and you can kind of tell they kind of congregate one area, and they don't like to spread out because the rest of the field is manure. So you know, but that is also a little bit. Then when they finally do move out, and then grass grows on that so fast that you know it's finally a good thing. But at least these cows are outside. We do happen to have, unfortunately, a few of those Auschwitz camps out here. The Monsanto camps.
Auschwitz.
The Auschwitz. That's what they are. I mean, you know, even in terms of, now we're going to get back, now we're getting into milk. Look at milk.
Yeah, yeah, my nice, healthy 1% milk fat milk jug that I brought home. No, it's got bovine growth hormone in it.
Yep. And then we're wondering why 11-year-old girls are developing breasts. 10-year-old girls develop, I mean... That's not natural. That is not the way it was when I was a kid. It's just not. It's like, huh?
Yeah, because I was an adolescent boy. And I was going, when's it going to happen? And you know,
yes, indeed. That's the honest truth of it. And it's just like, what is this? What is going on? I won't feed my... You know my milk comes in, Bob?
What?
Glass.
Yeah. You've got a real milkman, I'll bet.
I have to go get it. But
oh, okay.
It is in glass, and there's a big... Big line for the girls because they are young and you know they get the whole milk and it's you know if there's a couple inch layer thick of fat on it you know that cream is right up on top of it so I have to shake that bottle and you know it's unfortunate that you know
can I move to Wisconsin
you can come certainly come on up we got more than enough room out here. We do have a little high property tax, but you're more than welcome to come on up to Wisconsin. Because Wisconsin is, you know, even our Republicans out here are progressive. Where, like, you know, a lot of these guys are farmers, but they're realizing this very quickly, that we cannot continue this monoculture thing. We can't continue doing this stuff the way we're doing it with it. I mean, I in my town, a little Westby, we have 2,000 people, and we have an RSBT free dairy. And they make butter for the entire region. They make cheese. They make all this other stuff, and it's all RSBT free. And they've been doing it for like since Monsanto tried to pass that stuff off. And you know, like I was watching a very scary documentary on this RSBT, where they were like the FDA let Monsanto test their RSBT, their little whatever it's called. I forget what it's called. The actual drug that the hormone that they pump into the cows, but it's an RSBT thing.
Yeah.
Where they let them test some other company that hasn't been approved brand to on the cows to measure the hormone levels, and they were giving a daily injection where it was like 50 milligrams or something like that, and it was making the hormone production and the really bad hormone that is like it's like the number one risk factor for breast cancer and prostate cancer outside of some radiation thing or something like that. It's the number one risk cancer is this hormone that is found in cow's milk. And what happens is it raises that 80% with just their 50 milligram daily injection. The Monsanto one is 500 milligrams, and it's like a weekly or monthly injection.
Good.
So, yeah, if the 50 milligram raises the 80, what does the 500 milligram do? I mean, and that's the other thing, is like they were pumping out this RSBT at a time where we have milk surplus. But you know what that does then? Then they can powder the milk with the IMF banks and all this other stuff, and they go to these countries like Jamaica and all this other stuff where we have a debt to us because their dictators sit there and, you know, bought themselves, you know, a fleet of Mercedes 500 SLs and everything else. You know, they sit there and then, you know, the people don't get the money. They got the money and then the people have to pay this back. So what do the people do? The farmers in Jamaica and the farmers everywhere else and probably down in South Carolina and all this other, they do it here. If they do it there, they'll do it here. So what happens is they have to pay and they have to buy milk. So now these poor farmers, they can't sell their milk. They have to dump it out and they have to buy this powdered RSBT laden milk for these other countries too. I mean, it's just, it's abhorrent.
And why? Why? I mean, the big overarching why, then, and the answer to it, I will submit, is because the very wealthiest in our society and in the world have not figured out yet that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. Because no. there is no word surfeit does not exist in their vocabulary, because the word enough does not exist in their vocabulary.
That's my thing. That's a question I ask a lot of people. How much is enough? I mean, if you make, like, they have these guys I was listening to, I know, I don't like listening to, but I was in the car, and I don't like listening to the radio.
That's okay, I understand, and it made your ears bleed.
I was listening to NPR, but they were talking about these hedge funds, because now they're the new, you know, Tom Wolfe is coming out with a new book about the Masters of the Universe, and it's about these hedge fund guys, okay, and like, these guys are making, like, $1.7 billion a year. Like the top one was, and like the medium income for these guys is like $250 million a year. That's the middle. That's not the low. You know, that's the middle. And there's a couple of them making $100 million, and then a lot of them are making $700 million. If you make $700 million, can you please retire? You may have your $700 million. There's nothing that you can't do in this world. You have There's nothing that you and your family for 30 generations can't do. Okay? I mean, you have so much capital now and so much money at your disposal. When is it enough? I mean, that's what blows my mind. How much do you need? How much do you need, really, honestly?
And, you know, that has changed. Yeah, that as I have matured, Albert, that's changed for me, okay? I used to sit back in college and think about when I'd have the huge grand house and I'd have a study, and it would be, you know, recessed oak bookshelves and all my wonderful books, and I'd have this killer stereo system and a big screen TV and a little bar that would come out of the wall with only the finest, you know, the finest vintages and the best potables, and that's all gone now.
Yeah,
I think I matured through it. I still have it's like an itch you can't scratch for a Porsche, but you know we've all got our vulgarities.
Yes.
But I don't want that. You know, at this point, the house that I'm in has changed me because, and it's no shame to. I got to do a new roof. That's my creature comfort. I want to not have water in my house. The other creature comfort is we've got to jack up the front of the house because the floor is sagging. I want a floor that doesn't sag.
Me too.
You know how you know I want to be able to drop a marble on the living room floor and not have it roll to the front door.
Me too.
but you know, and so you know, to answer that question, you know, how much is enough? Well, you know, I get those two things. It's not quite enough.
Yeah.
It's not quite enough. I'd like to be able to build a new house.
Yeah. Well.
But my list is much shorter now. I want a reliable vehicle. I want a house that's big enough for all of us. I'd like to grow the horn to the point that we've got standalone studios.
Mm-hmm.
And provide for my kids' education.
We can achieve these things when we work together. If we were to all work together, all humanity was to work together, I think the standard of living, we would all essentially somewhat be middle class. And, I mean, there will always be those that have more than others, and that's fine, and there will always be those that are less than others, but as long as the you know, I don't want to sound communist, because, I mean, but at the same time, I don't want anyone starving, and I don't want anyone doing these, you know, like going without health care and going without this and having a leaky roof. You shouldn't have to have a leaky roof, because in a sense, but when they're charged so much with all this health care, and I hope, you know, I hope you got insurance, and I hope you don't have to sit here and go to the doctor, and he tells you these things, and then all of a sudden, you know, like these bills go on and on and on, and I really want you to take care of yourself, because, man, renal failure is not a good thing to go through, and it's not a cheap thing to go through, and it's one of those things that will hemorrhage your, you know, the future,
yeah.
That dream. So, I'd love that, too, and I want my house, where my dream is, I want my house to be sustainable. I want my electricity, you know, to be provided for, and these are all things that, you know, you know, even in that, solar panels in, on everyone's roof. I mean, they talk about, you know, oh, if we were to have a solar generator, we'd need a state the size of Arizona, and it would have to, you know, so on and so forth to meet our needs, and that's unreasonable. Well, everyone's roof is exposed to the sun, and we can, or just about everyone, and we can put solar panels on everyone's roof, and then everybody could kind of be part of that power plant. You know, these are things that I think, you know, like, we should have tremendous tax incentives for these kinds of things. We're paying taxes. Well, people would have a problem with that, but they don't have a problem with these taxes going to destroy things and have bigger bombs and smaller nukes so we can use them. You know, like, they don't have a problem with that, but they're going to have a problem with...
Well, but are they... no, wait, Albert, are they awake enough to have a problem?
That's true. That's true, too.
Now, while we've been talking, I've gone over to MSNBC to look at the way they are blogging this debate that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
NBC's Chuck Todd says, "Do no harm. That's the theme of this debate so far. This was a group of candidates afraid to make news tonight and afraid to engage. They took the first impression factor to heart." Gun debate. A surprising amount of the Democratic candidates claim to have had guns in their household. Look for reporters to follow up with them and find out what kind and when. Yeah, by God, you know he's right, Albert, because we're going to find out what kind of guns they got, but because they're Democrats, you know. We're going to ask the hard questions.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you should have... Well, we got Republicans like McCain saying we're going to put bombs under John Stewart's desk. I mean, that's an IED. I mean, that's why I got some respect from Murtha when I watched him. I mean, he was pissed off, and I don't blame him because I was pissed off, and I'm glad that he expressed some of my anger and frustration when I see these kinds of things. I mean, did you watch Murtha's retort?
When he just blasted.
Yeah.
When he said, you know, don't talk about we're fighting this war. We're standing here in an air-conditioned facility. We ain't fighting this war. You talking about, is that one?
Yeah, and then, yeah, that one exactly. And then, you know, and talking about IEDs, McCain talking about IEDs when, you know, there's, I don't know how many we got now, 35,000, 37,000 wounded. And, you know, a large portion of that is from IEDs. And, you know, and that's why, you know, I've been saying this about Iraq since, I said this about Iraq before Iraq began, was it's Vietnam II. This is Vietnam II. It, you know, a large portion of the casualties on our side come from booby traps, and an IED certainly classifies as a booby trap. So, you know, and we're stuck in this quagmire. Nobody wants us there. We don't, our enemy blends right in with the locals. I mean, and the locals are supporting them, and we have, you know, locals now. I mean, you know, I was talking to my buddy who is actually, he's a Republican. it's just sad. But however, he sits there and he has Russ Feingold, which is the one of the respectable Democrats
mm-hmm.
out there, and he's trying to get him to get out of the military, which makes me kind of laugh a little bit that he's afraid to go back to Iraq and do some walking after all his talking. But he's over here talking about how, and he uses the racial slur of the Hajis, he calls them, and because that's what they all call them, and he's talking about how they're the ones preparing the food for them. Now, if you're in a guerrilla conflict in an insurgency, Bob, and you're a troop, and the government is handing out contracts to have, why do you think they're getting rotten food? They're lucky that's all they're getting. These guys are, what else do you think? I mean, if we were a police...
And again, that goes to the way these people operate. We've had a military for, you were in it. You were in the military. The joke is always, how bad the food is.
Yep.
In the military. But you know what? It's food that was prepared by people who are also in the military with you.
Exactly.
There's a reason you do that, because if you do not protect your food supply, your army is crippled.
Oh, Napoleon knew that one. And that's like the same thing. If you're a police officer, would you go to a drive-thru?
Right.
No. No. So why would you have locals, no matter how loyal they say they are, in terms of you're an insurgent war, why would you have them prepare the food?
Remember, the bomb that went off in the Iraqi parliament started in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's another thing. They talk about it's getting better, it's getting better. It's getting way worse. These guys are infiltrating everything, and they're saying that it's getting better.
What's to infiltrate? It's their country,
through that, indeed.
I don't think they had to infiltrate. Just wait long enough, and one of the people who works in the kitchen will get really pissed off.
Yep. That's why, and then they say, oh, is it traitor to call the war unwinnable? No, the war is unwinnable. You can't win a guerrilla conflict, Bob. I think we said this, you and I said this in our first conversation over a year ago now. You can't win a guerrilla conflict. You just can't. It doesn't happen.
It is not susceptible to victory.
Yeah, unless we make a parking lot out of the place, but
There's a way to do this. I mean, if these and that's the thing. These beyond anything else, Albert, these people are incompetent. If you want to be empire, you have to go and act like empire, and that means going and removing the entire population of the country and resettling them somewhere else and repopulating it with your own people. Rome did it. The Soviet Union did it. It's been done time and time again down through history. The ancient Greeks did it.
Yes, they did.
But we're not that kind of country, I don't think.
We're not.
And it takes a force of probably a couple of million soldiers to pull that off.
Well, all that takes is the beast to have a burp, and it's like, I hate wanting to put the tinfoil hat on, but this is something that is. In terms of just government, it's a historical precedent. This is like the oldest trick in the book for them. And all it takes is one more trick like that, and a lot of people that feel a lot of ways will shut up, and they'll go back, and they'll sign up, and they'll go out and sign, and there will be a million man war.
You talk about a million people though, and that's the other answer to the question that we started out with. We are not going to leave Iraq. You're right, and I'm right. It's not going to happen, and it's not going to happen because they don't want to leave Iraq. And the other side of that coin is the only way to make us leave Iraq is for us to mobilize and for about a million people to descend on Washington, D.C. and say we are not leaving until we leave Iraq. But you see, again, that is not going to happen. I don't mean to pee on anybody's Wheaties or anything, but it's not going to happen. We are worked to death in this country, and we can't afford to lose our job, because then we start getting the calls from Capital One, and then the credit rating goes, and we can't make the car payment and the house payment and the four-wheeler payment, and the wife can't go to the Longaberger basket parties anymore or the home interior and bring that to this. No, we can't do it.
Our velvet shackles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were happy in our chains.
Yeah, we're in the cave, enjoying the shadows on the wall. no bother, no reason to turn around and look at what's causing those shadows, because we're just content.
Because we're happy with the shadows.
Exactly. It's going to take something that is like to that magnitude. We're going to have to amp it up to that magnitude. It can't be a weekend. It can't be a day. It's got to be month after month after month after month. There's got to be so many people that the cops couldn't do anything.
And we can't do that.
Well.
At least we're not at that agony level yet where we're willing to. Albert, this has been a blast.
Yeah, indeed. I loved it.
Time for the news, though.
All right.
All right, you take it easy.
Always.
Bye-bye. Be good to those babies.
Oh, you know that.
I know that. We'll see.
It's Agnes and all the right. Kid and the roof.
And the roof. Bye.
Some tomatoes in the ground. Bye.
So many things to do. Let's do take a break for the news. You know, you heard me early on. I tried to stop for a break, and Agnes wouldn't.
Don't blame me.
So I feel a bobstered. I didn't know if we were ready for a break. We're going to the news now. Hey, that's Conversation Radio, what you just heard. You tell me anywhere else in America you get to hear that. Only on America's Liberal Voice. Only on the Horn.
On the bridge, I'm waiting in the dark. I thought that you'd be here by now. There's nothing but the rain. No footsteps on the ground. I'm listening, but there's no sound. Isn't anyone trying to find me? Won't somebody come take me home? It's that day.
This is the Quality News Network. The Senate has approved the Iraq War Funding Bill that contains a troop withdrawal start date of October 1st. The Senate vote was 51 in favor to 46 opposed. A day ago, the House approved the Senate's language on the spending bill that included the timeline for U.S. troops to leave Iraq. The House vote was 218 to 208. At a press conference this morning regarding the passage of the bill, Democrats urged the president to reconsider his veto threat of any bill containing a withdrawal timeline. White House spokesperson Dana Perino said the bill is dead before arrival. She told reporters President Bush is determined to win in Iraq. A spokesman for the Iraqi government criticized the congressional vote for, quote, sending the wrong signals. The U.S. top commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, held a press conference at the Pentagon today. He described the situation in Iraq as exceedingly complex and very tough. Petraeus added that the war may become worse but gets better. He said the endeavor will require an enormous commitment over time. A senior U.S. officer in Iraq has been charged with aiding the enemy, according to the U.S. military. He's accused of providing an unmonitored cell phone to detainees. He's also accused of fraternizing with the daughter of a detainee. Eight of the Democratic presidential hopefuls will debate tonight in South Carolina at the State University in Orangeburg. The 90-minute debate will be moderated by NBC's Brian Williams. It's the early presidential debate ever held, earliest. The 26-year-old son of Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee has pleaded guilty after he was arrested at Little Rock Airport for having a loaded weapon in his carry-on. The son of the former Arkansas governor said it was a silly mistake. State police are taking steps to revoke his concealed weapons permit. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is signaling that she will not agree to the congressional subpoena to testify about discredited pre-war intelligence on Iraq. She said the issue has been answered repeatedly. Rice is in Oslo for a NATO foreign ministers meeting. And Russian President Vladimir Putin has indicated he will not run for a third term in next year's elections. In an address to the nation, he did not mention who he would like to see as his political successor. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have four convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Researchers have used a new technique to identify several new genes that increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. Scientists looked at the entire human genome of about 50,000 people worldwide, those with and without the disease. By doing so, they identified eight genes that are clear diabetes risk factors. The findings, published in the journals Science and Nature Genetics, could lead to new medications and tests for the disease. Texas lawmakers have prevented Governor Rick Perry from going ahead with his plan to require sixth graders to receive an anti-cervical cancer vaccine. The bill passed yesterday blocks state officials from making the shots a requirement for the next 4 years. The Bush administration will extend $1 billion in housing aid to Hurricane Katrina and Rita victims. And Rupert Murdoch will introduce the popular social networking website MySpace.com to China. China has the world's largest growing internet market. IBM mainframe computers will soon have the same video chip that powers the Sony PlayStation 3 video game console. The microprocessor, which has been called a supercomputer on a chip, will allow the machines to run complex games. Light sweet crude is trading at $65.06 a barrel. The Dow closed up 16 points, a new record. The NASDAQ up 7. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
That was just refreshing. I love a conversation like that. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. You know, it's there for all of you. It is there. That's the point of all of this. Is to get this kind of dialogue going again in this country. Because, you know, the whole aim of the Republican right has been to isolate us, to make us feel alone, and to keep us from having those kinds of conversations. Because those things are mutually empowering. And that's what the horn exists here to do. I want to sneak in. Shh, don't anybody tell MSNBC, okay? Agnes, can you get us the audio from the debate? Okay, let's see. Let's see if we can get this.
Now,
Bill Richardson.
My precepts in foreign policy are this. I think this president characterizes this. Being stubborn isn't a foreign policy. And power without diplomacy is blind. I would focus my presidency on dealing with the real threats to America. International terrorism, nuclear proliferation. I've dealt directly with North Korea. I think we've made the situation better. Number three, I would deal with issues like Darfur. Why isn't that America does not care about Africa, about genocide, about issues relating to enormous amount of deaths that are brought forth by international poverty.
Governor, thank you. We're all out of time. Senator Clinton, Rudolph Giuliani, friend of yours from back home, said this past week, quote, "The Democrats do not understand the full nature and scope of the terrorist war against us." Another quote, "America will be safer with a Republican president." How do you think, Senator, it happened that that notion of Republicans as protectors in a post 9/11 world has taken on so?
Well, Brian, I think that as a senator from New York, it is something that I've worked on very hard ever since 9/11. to try to convince the administration to do those things that would actually work to make us safer. And I think there's a big disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality. You know, we haven't secured our borders, our ports, our mass transit systems. You can go across this country and see so much that has not been done. The resources haven't gotten to the front lines where decisions are made in local government the way that they need to. And I think that this administration has consistently tried to hype the fear without delivering on the promise of making America safer. And its foreign policy around the world, as you've heard from all of my colleagues here, has also made the world less stable, which of course has a ripple effect with respect to what we're going to face in the future. So I hope that we can put that myth to rest. It is certainly something I will try to do during the campaign.
Senator Dodd, same question. How has this label been attached to the Democratic Party, that the Republicans will protect America best?
Well, it's a great question, Brian, because it's a myth in a sense. When you consider what this administration has done over 6 years.
See, the answer to that is, they did it because they're liars.
Here, our first responders are not getting the support they deserve. The administration has been resistant in supporting them. The war in Iraq, rather than dealing with the Taliban and Afghanistan, where our efforts should have been over the last number of years, not building the kind of international support. Stateless terrorism is a multinational problem. It's a tactic. It requires a multinational response. This administration has walked away from that. The very institutions we need to build to have us effectively engage and fight back against terrorism, this administration seems to take the other track and move in a different direction. I would have asked your question earlier, what's the serious threat we face? It is stateless terrorism. It isn't states. It's the absence of diplomacy, the absence of engaging with nations around the world to build those relationships that allow us to have a far more effective response to this scourge that we face in this century. We need to have leadership that knows how to build those relationships to encourage that kind of participation. This administration has done just the opposite.
Senator, thank you. Second show of hands question. Do you believe
show
there is
of
such
hands
a thing
question
as a global war on terror?
I see Timmy, and I see Cindy, and I see...
Let's try Congressman Kucinich. Why is your hand not up?
Because the fact of the matter is that the global war on terror has been a pretext for aggressive war. As President of the United States, I intend to take America in a different direction, rejecting war as an instrument of policy, reconnecting with the nations of the world so that we can address the real issues that affect security all over the globe and affect our security at home, getting rid of all nuclear weapons, the United States participating in the Chemical Weapons Convention, the Biological Weapons Convention, the Small Arms Treaty, the Landmine Treaty, joining the International Criminal Court, signing the Kyoto Climate Change Treaty. The world's waiting for an American president who reaches out in a hand of friendship and who understands this is a complex world but doesn't see the world in terms of enemies. The minute that we have dichotomous thinking of us versus them, we lose the opportunity to be able to connect with people. I'd open up relations with Syria and Iran and all those nations that need the United States to say we want to talk. And I'd also put right on the front of the agenda peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, because I can play an even-handed role in moving and reaching out to bring those peoples together.
Time has expired. Thank you, Congressman. Senator Obama, if, God forbid, 1,000 times while we were gathered here tonight, we learned that two American cities had been hit simultaneously by terrorists, and we further learned, beyond the shadow of a doubt, it had been the work of Al-Qaeda, how would you change the U.S. military stance overseas as a result?
And if you were a tree, what kind of a tree would you be?
First, make sure that we've got an effective emergency response, something that this administration failed to do when we had a hurricane in New Orleans. And I think that we have to review how we operate in the event of not only a natural disaster, but also a terrorist attack. The second thing is to make sure that we've got good intelligence, A, to find out that we don't have other threats and attacks potentially out there, and B, to find out, do we have any intelligence on who might have carried it out, so that we can take potentially some action to dismantle.
So that we can go make some war!
But what we can't do is then alienate the world community based on faulty intelligence, based on bluster and bombast. Instead, the next thing we would have to do in addition to talking to the American people, is making sure that we are talking to the international community, because it's already been stated. We're not going to defeat terrorists on our own. We've got to strengthen our intelligence relationship with them, and they've got to feel a stake
in
our security
by
recognizing that we have mutual security interests at stake.
Senator, thank you. Senator Edwards, same question. God forbid simultaneous attacks tonight. We knew it was Al-Qaeda. What would you change about U.S. military stance overseas?
Well, the first thing I would do is be certain I knew who was responsible, and I would act swiftly and strongly to hold them responsible for that. The second thing I would do, and some of these have been mentioned already, is find out how that this happened without our intelligence operations finding out that it was in a planning stage. How did they get through what we all recognize is a fairly porous homeland security system that we have in this country that has not been built the way it needed to be built? You know, did the weapons that created these two simultaneous strikes come through our ports? Were they in one of the containers that have not been checked? How did these weapons get here? And how do we stop it from happening again? I believe, and this goes to the question you asked earlier just a few minutes ago, global war on terror. I think there are dangerous people and dangerous leaders in the world that America must deal with and deal with strongly. But we have more tools available to us than bombs. And America needs to use the tools that are available to them so that these people who are sitting on the fence, who terrorists are trying to recruit the next generation, get pushed to our side, not to the other side. We've had no long-term strategy, and Senator, we need one, and I will provide one as well.
We're out of time. Thank you. Senator Clinton, same question.
Well, again, having been a senator during 9/11, I understand very well the
extraordinary
horror of that kind of an attack and the impact that it has far beyond those who are directly affected. I think a president must move as swiftly as is prudent to retaliate. If we are attacked and we can determine who was behind that attack, and if there were nations that supported...
Just a question. What the hell ever happened to Ain't Gonna Study War No More? What happened to that?
We should quickly respond. Now, that doesn't mean we go looking for other fights.
We're going to stay with it on this question because I want to see how Dennis responds.
When he went after Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. And then when he decided to divert attention to Iraq, it was not a decision that I would have made had I been president, because we still haven't found bin Laden. So let's focus on those who have attacked us and do everything we can to destroy them.
Out of time, Senator. Thank you. Just over 14 minutes left by my calculations. Let's enter more of a mixed bag of questions here as we go down the home stretch. Another show of hands. Is anyone on this stage willing to enter into Congressman Kucinich's effort to impeach Vice President Cheney? That being the response, Congressman, perhaps it's an appropriate question. Is this
not
a proper
hand,
use
not
of
one hand.
Public congressional time and energy?
This is a pocket copy of the Constitution, which I carry with me, because I took an oath to defend the Constitution. We've spent a lot of time talking about Iraq here tonight and America's role in the world. This country was taken into war based on lies. This country was taken into war based on lies about weapons of mass destruction and Al-Qaeda's role with respect to Iraq, which there wasn't one at the time we went in. I want to state that Mr. Cheney must be held accountable. He is already ginning up a cause for war against Iran. Now, we have to stand for this Constitution. We have to protect and defend this Constitution. And this Vice President has violated this Constitution. So I think that while my friends on the stage may not be ready to take this stand, the American people should know that there's at least one person running for president who wants to reconnect America with its goodness, with its greatness, with its highest principles, which currently are not being reflected by those who are in the White House.
Time has expired.
God bless you.
Thank you. Senator Dodd, the state of Connecticut has legalized civil unions for gay people. Tell me, is there a difference between gay marriage and civil unions?
Well, I was beginning this question, Brian, by asking people
get back to
consider
the culture wars.
what they would do in the case of their own children. I have two very young daughters who one day may have a different sexual orientation than their parents. How would I like them treated as adults? What kind of housing, what kind of homes, what kind of jobs, what kind of retirement would they be allowed to have? I think if you ask yourself that question, you come to the conclusion that I hope most Americans would, that they ought to be able to have those loving relationships sanctioned. I'm proud of the fact that my state has done so. I'm proud of the fact that Governor Lynch in New Hampshire is going to sign legislation which makes that possible. I believe that civil unions are appropriate and proper. I don't support same-sex marriage. And the distinction there, I think, is one of more of what's available.
I knew what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen when I did this. I ought to know better. I'm a pragmatist. I'm a realist. But I got to tell you, I got tears in my eyes right now. Hillary Clinton, Christopher Dodd, Bill Richardson, Barack Obama, John Edwards. Not one hand went up in support of impeaching Dick Cheney. But see, that's not it. Not one hand, by God, went up in support of the Constitution of the United States of America. I've waffled a little bit. I thought, I made that smarmy horseshit statement earlier about I'll vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is, and I guess I will. But there is only one person on that stage right now who is fit to occupy the Oval Office. And it is not Hillary Clinton. And it is not Barack Obama. And it is not Christopher Dodd. And it is not Bill Richardson. And it is not John Edwards. Did you hear what... Of course you heard what Dennis Kucinich just said. How was that not presidential? How was that not worthy of the attention of a grieving, aching, bleeding nation? I heard something that was Lincoln-esque in that. I want the people watching this debate to know, he said, that there is one person standing here who believes in the Constitution. And lightning quick, Brian Williams got away from it. Nope, can't talk about that. We got to talk about gay marriage. Even though it's not a federal issue that could be affected by the presidency, we got to talk about gay marriage. Jesus and his brother Harry. Impeachment? What impeachment? Next, gay marriage. And I'm not trying to harp on people for whom gay marriage is an important issue. It is an important issue, and it's an important issue that you solve on the state level until such time as Congress preempts and makes uniform the marriage laws of this entire nation. Marriage debates are not a congressional issue or a presidential issue. Period. Damn! Oh, and by the way, the part you didn't hear, I got a couple of emails in, one from David and the other from David. Our buddy David in Tennessee and our buddy David in South Carolina. David in South Carolina, subject line of the email, debate question on Edwards' haircut. And David, knowing how I am, answers my, because he knows, you know, no, he didn't. And yes, he did, is the first sentence of David's email. Yes, he did. Brian Williams asked John Edwards about the Edwards $400 haircut. I mean, I promised you I would never do impaired radio like Rush Limbaugh does. But I'm within arm's reach of a bottle of something, and I'm about to get after it. Brian Williams asked John Edwards about a goddamn haircut. Sorry. Agnes, I'm sorry. It slipped out. Now Agnes is all mad at me.
No, I'm mad. No, I'm mad because the people that are supposed to represent us aren't representing us. The only person there was Dennis Kucinich, and the rest of them that are supposed to be there in support. Now I see why the war's still going.
And why it's going to keep going, Agnes.
How much are they making off of this? Exactly. Where are they that they represent us in this?
Empty suits. Empty suits.
Is Hillary's daughter going to war?
Nope.
And the guy that's worried about...
And Barack's kids won't either.
Now, wait a minute. The guy that was worried about his kids having same-sex marriage, Jeannie's there. His daughter's in a union. She's getting ready to have a child. I don't think that they really care. That's not the issue.
Well,
the issue
David,
how much money they can make off of our dead.
David finishes up. He says, and people wonder what's wrong with this country. What the... And you know what the next word is.
Don't complain about the Republicans. It's... No. You better let me finish. Don't complain about the Republicans unless you can complain about your own party, too, because they're not in it for us. The only man up there was Dennis Kucinich.
The rest of them are empty suits. Well, you know, he was predisposed to support Dennis. You're damn right I was predisposed to support Dennis Kucinich. Because I, unlike my many, many, many millions of fellow Americans, have listened for several years now to Dennis Kucinich. There is one man suited to be the president of the United States out of the field of both Republicans and Democrats. And it's Dennis Kucinich. Period. And yet, the other email from our buddy David in Tennessee, he writes in, Dennis emphatically stated the Democrats have the power to end this war right now. Later, John Edwards got down to bedrock issues. Paying $400 for a haircut was a mistake. Belize and Costa Rica and places like that just look a little bit better every day. I guess I can buy some heavy winter boots and insulated clothing and think about Canada, too. What do you make of this? Oh, by the way, while we're at it, the blog. Bob Schrum said, Bob Schrum and Hillary Rosen both think Hillary Clinton started out strong. Rosen says, Senators Clinton and Biden gave good, focused, starting answers. Clinton gave the best and firm overview of the politics. Biden gave a great, brief overview of the tactical, military, and political questions we face. Schrum says, it was crisp, talking about Hillary. It was crisp, almost without a whiff of nuance. Are we talking about a political candidate or a freaking wine? I said another bad word.
When the transit workers were on strike, what was so crisp about Hillary? Who was she standing with?
Oh,
it wasn't the workers.
That's when she went to the ribbon cutting for Goldman Sachs. Yeah.
So I guess we're here to serve them instead of them serving us. Is that it?
Yeah, that's about the speed.
So when are we going to crown the new monarchy?
I'm just... The first round of questions on Iraq has just ended, this is from their blog, and there weren't any real fireworks. Senator Edwards was asked whether his past comment, we need a leader who will tell the truth when they've made a mistake, was a shot against Clinton and her refusal to apologize for voting to authorize the Iraq War. He said it was a matter of her conscience, and Clinton responded by saying she has taken responsibility for her Iraq author, and Mersey Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lamsey Divey, a Kiddly Divey too, wouldn't you? What about that haircut, Senator? God, they ran the haircut thing on Bill Clinton. Doesn't this ever get old? Oh, and let's see. And Shrum tells the second-tier candidates what they have to do. Make a good impression that outlasts the night. Get noticed. Inch up and begin raising some more money. You'll notice Mr. Shrum didn't have anything to say about, you know, actually being committed to the Republic. Damn! Boom! Meanwhile, by virtue of a panel posted by Tom Tomorrow, and this goes to the Brian Williamses of the world and others, a series of quotes before the war. I shared one with you already from O'Reilly. I'll bet you the best dinner in the Gaslight District of San Diego that military action will not last more than a week. How about William Crystal, Bill Crystal? There is a certain amount of pop psychology in America that the Shia can't get along with the Sunnis. There's almost no evidence of that at all. Brendan Minotier, OpinionJournal.com. It's amazing that more than 2 weeks into the liberation of Iraq, the anti-war crowd is still spinning a doomsday scenario. That's April 8th, 2003. How about Dick Toesucker Morris? April 9th, 2003. Over the next couple of weeks, when we find the chemical weapons this guy was amassing, the left is going to hang its head for 3 or 4 more years. Fred Barnes, April 10th, 2003. 4 long years ago. The war was the hard part, and it gets easier. I mean, setting up a democracy is hard, but not as hard as winning a war. Oh, Tony Snow, Fox News, April 13th, 2003. The 3-week swing through Iraq has utterly shattered skeptics' complaints. Charles Krauthammer. The only people who think this wasn't a victory are Upper West Side liberals and a few people here in Washington. Chris Matthews, May 1st, 2003. This is the guy who said at the beginning of the war, "We're all neocons now!" Americans love having a guy as president, a guy who has a little swagger. The women like this war. I think we like having a hero as our president. We're not like the Brits. Howard Fineman, MSNBC, May 7th, 2003. We had controversial wars that divided the country. This war united the country and brought the military back. Morton Kondracki, Fox News, April 12, 2003. There's a lot of work yet to do, but all the naysayers have been humiliated so far. The final word on this is, hooray! And my personal favorite, I guess if that would be the right word, Mona Charon, syndicated column, May 4, 2003. 9th, maybe? Small print. American forces are being love-bombed by Baghdadis on a daily basis. Everywhere they go, Americans are cheered and thanked personally. what if you did your job in such a way that you screwed up everything you laid your hand to? I mean, let's say you've got a job in a garage and your job is putting on brakes. And every pair of brakes you put on, the car pulls out of the garage and immediately goes screaming into a telephone pole or something because the car won't stop because it has no brakes. What if you build houses? And no sooner do you turn the keys over to the new owners, the roof collapses, the plumbing explodes, and the electricity burns the house down. What if? I don't know. What if you're a baker, and all the bread you sell makes people violently ill? You know? What would happen to you? You would not have a job. You would not to get to, you would not get that get to do that job anymore. On the other hand, there is a certain class in our society who gets to screw up day in and day out, never get it right. In fact, drag this nation in a direction that causes families to be shattered and broken and irredeemably, irretrievably destroyed. And they're wrong the first time they open their mouths, they're wrong the second time they open their mouths, and the third and the fourth and the thousandth time they open their stinking, filthy mouths, they're wrong. Not just a little bit, not a question of degree, but great big honking obviously wrong. Well, that is the pundit class in America. You know, I remember that there were self-help books about, you know, the road to excellence and be excellent. It doesn't apply to the people who are out there solely for the purpose of promoting political ideologies. I mean, think about it. What if the weapons had been found? What if Saddam really had a secret nuclear reactor program and he was getting ready to bomb the world? And all of us peaceniks had been out here raising a ruckus and had been proved disastrously wrong. The pundit class would not have let up yet. We would not be able to show our faces in public. We would have been driven into the nethermost recesses of the culture. Anathematized, stigmatized. Called un-American and America haters. Oh, wait, they did that anyway. And in our full retreat, they would still be hounding us to the earth. Well, that's not what happened. We were right. We were right all along. Not by a matter of degree, but by a matter of totality. We were unerringly correct. And we have not hounded these people to the earth. Hell, we haven't even sent them into retreat. A little program like this exists. The other, Mark Levine, Guy James, John Fox, Joe Vecchio, the Horn family. And we're trying, you know, we're trying to empower people to start fighting back, to send these vicious fools into retreat. How about that haircut? and others are trying to do it. Over at Nova M. Mike Molloy. Other isolated people who talk about this kind of thing are trying to do it. There won't be any headlines tomorrow about Dennis Kucinich pressing for the impeachment of Dick Cheney and demanding that we honor and support and protect and defend the most single precious thing the American people possess, the Constitution. There won't be any headlines like that tomorrow. No, 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 damn it. We're going to have headlines about John Edwards' godforsaken haircut. And how Hillary was crisp. Oh, God, she was a veritable cornflake. She was so crisp.
Let me ask you something. Would you want Hillary to represent you or anybody else there? When you look at your family, what do you want them to represent? Goodness? Decency? Or death? The fascination they have with this war, they're not doing it for just giggles. They're getting something out of it. I think that all financial records should be public, just like ours are. IRS, get your tax returns right. Let's look at their records and see what they've got.
No, I think what you mean is you want to look at their stock portfolios, dear.
Let's see. Soros bought into Halliburton, right?
What? Huh?
That's right. Yes, he did.
Yeah, he may own stock in Halliburton. I mean, that may be possible.
So. Sure. But is it really a good thing to make money off of blood?
No, of course not, dear. This is almost beyond comprehension. The Dennis brought up the fact that Dick Cheney is out there ginning up a war against Iran. Well, that was no lie. He is. So's George Bush. So's Condoleezza Rice. You know, I don't agree with this subpoena, so I don't think I'll be showing up. I'm just not coming, okay? You know, I heard there are some lovely shoes at Ferragamo in New York City, and you know, they'll be going fast. I've got to get up there. I can't testify. I've already answered those questions back when the Republicans controlled the Senate. What the hell are you people doing? Don't you know who I am? No, but if you look around and you have to kind of, oh, you've got to get your vaccinations and everything and go over to the right wing of the web, and you'll find the setup for the war. There's a freak at Newsmax. Don't go there. Don't help them. I do this so you don't have to. There's a freak there named Kenneth Timmerman. Headline, source, Iran holding FBI agent hostage. The Iranian intelligence service is believed to have abducted a former FBI agent. Headline says, Iran holding FBI agent hostage. It doesn't say former FBI. No, by God, because the little wing nuts will go squeaking and howling and flying by, and all they have to... Iran's holding an FBI! Bomb them! Damn! Bomb them! The Iranian intelligence service is believed to have abducted a former FBI agent, Robert Levinson, while he was meeting an Iranian contact at the Persian Gulf resort on Kish Island. The reason? Iran wants to force a trade with the United States for a former top Iranian military official, Brigadier General Alireza Asghari, whom the Iranians think may have applied for asylum in the United States, according to refugee documents made available in Newsmax. There's The State Department has launched several inquiries about Levinson's whereabouts through the Swiss embassy in Tehran and through other foreign governments, State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said on Tuesday. While not calling Levinson a hostage, McCormick said he could not rule out the possibility that he was in custody of the Iranian authorities. Yeah, so there's not a damn bit of hard facts in there, not one hard fact, except that Mr. Levinson is apparently somewhere that other people can't reach him. But you get a headline, and that's all it takes is the stinking headline, Iran holding FBI agent hostage. You know, somebody call Elliot Ness, for the love of God! We've got to have a war! And this business with this bill that's going to go up and get vetoed by George Bush about funding the war, it contains everything that they could possibly need to take care of the troops. It even contains funding more closely approximating something that would be considered appropriate for our wounded vets coming home. And George Bush is going to veto that as sure as God made little green apples and little green apples give you the trots. And he's going to say, I need a clean bill. And the next question is, what does the Congress do then? You know, if our Congress has any stones whatsoever, they'll say, George, we sent you the bill, you vetoed the bill, we're not going to do another bill. We gave you your shot, you punk. And you attacked the troops. Why wouldn't you support the troops, George? Why do you hate America, George? But I fear that they won't. They'll say, okay, well, we tried. Okay. I mean, okay, so they got to send him some sort of a bill. Let's be realistic. Or, I mean, I don't know. Dennis Kucinich says the money's already there. There's enough money to start bringing him home. No, okay, so they do another bill. You know what you do with the next bill? You send him the same bill, only you move the withdrawal date back toward now. You didn't like that one? Here's one, George! And, of course, they'll be delivering this bill to his desk on the anniversary of his mission accomplished speech, flying onto the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln when it was parked in sight of San Diego Harbor, and they had to turn the whole blessed craft around so that nobody'd see that behind George as he said, major combat operations have ended. And, of course, Dana Perino, oh, my God, Dana, came out and said that delivering the bill to George Bush on the anniversary of his mission accomplished speech was a cheap PR stunt. As our good friends over at WD40.com have noted in a photograph there, it's the picture of George with his little flight suit and the whole codpiece thing going, and that wasn't a PR stunt? I hope, I sincerely hope that the Democrats in Congress will send him back a bill that shows that they are determined, they're willing to work with him. He wants the money, here's the money. But there's a give and take in it. Because I do want our troops home. I don't want our military destroyed. I don't. There are far too many people who serve with far too much honor to have a punk bastard like George Bush, he who suffers so much, tear them all to pieces. I want them home. I want this stinking war over, the heartbreak to end, the caskets that we don't see arriving at Dover, Delaware. I want that to stop. I want it to end. but I'm enough of a pragmatist that I know that it probably will not. And it won't, because there aren't a million Americans who are willing to go to Washington, D.C. and stay in Washington, D.C. until it ends. And it won't end because we've got stuff we've got to do. And we got jobs to go to, and mortgages to pay for, and car loans to pay off, and the roof's gone bad, and the plumbing needs to be replaced, and we can't leave! Because our own problems are so much more immediate and pressing upon us than the problems of this once great nation. And that is... Oh, that's enough to send you. Yeah, I'm in a funk. I should probably just play music for the next 10 minutes until it ends, because... I mentioned it talking to Albert, the thing from Representative Dennis Richardson in Oregon. His words, not mine: "This past week has been like no other. On Monday, the world witnessed the tragedy at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. On Tuesday, Oregon witnessed the passage of domestic benefits for same-sex couples and civil rights based on sexual orientation. God, the humanity, the tragedy of it all." Oh, and by the way, a report released yesterday, the Army said it's hiring case managers and boosting oversight at military medical facilities, after a new internal review concluded poor outpatient care extended beyond Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Say it, Agnes.
Duh, you think?
The investigation found staffing shortages, excessive paperwork, and poor training that created too much bureaucracy and long waits for injured soldiers, particularly at Fort Stewart in Georgia and Fort Hood and Fort Bliss in Texas. There are also problems at Fort Lewis in Washington State. I wonder how many of these bases had their military care outsourced to the private sector. On while we're at it, did this one slip past you? Probably not. You guys are more informed than I am, but it probably slipped past America, or at best it's too complicated to think about. The Justice Department has asked a federal appeals court, the Justice Department, Alberto Gonzalez, Fredo. The Justice Department has asked a federal appeals court to impose tighter restrictions on the hundreds of lawyers who represent detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the request has become a central issue in a new legal battle over the administration's detention policies. Detention is something that my kid gets at school when he sticks his tongue out at a little girl or something. You get detention. When the Bush administration uses it, detention means you get hung up by your thumbs because your legs have been beaten to a bloody pulp. Claiming that visits by civilian lawyers and attorney-client mail have caused, quote, intractable problems and threats to security at Guantanamo. A Justice Department filing proposes new limits on the lawyers' contact with their clients and access to evidence in their cases that would replace more expansive rules that have governed them since they began visiting Guantanamo detainees in 2004. The filing says the lawyers have caused unrest among the detainees and have improperly served as a conduit to the news media. The Justice Department filing claims, and I quote, "There is no right on the part of counsel to access to detained aliens on a secure military base in a foreign country." They can't even win in these damn kangaroo courts, so now they're going to try to hogtie the lawyers. Remember, it's all cute and people have T-shirts in Shakespeare, first thing we do, let's kill all the lawyers. Remember, that was put in the mouth of a conspirator who wanted to end any form of democratic government. Pay attention, because what they get away with and what they experiment on in Guantanamo is coming to a republic near you. Oh, wait a minute. It's already here. Under the provisions of the torture bill, you can be indefinitely detained without notice to your wife, your husband, your kids, your friends, your family, your lawyer, your boss, nobody! Until such time as your citizenship has been completely and satisfactorily ascertained. The U.S. military says a senior U.S. officer has been charged with 9 offenses, including aiding the enemy and fraternizing with the daughter of a detainee while he commanded a military police detachment at an American detention facility near Baghdad. Does that mean Abu Ghraib? Army Lieutenant Colonel William H. Steele was accused of giving aid to the enemy by providing an unmonitored cell phone to detainees. Tell you what. They'll court-martial him. While we're at it, let's court-martial the people who are arguing... well, never mind. But at least there's still some old-fashioned justice in America. Out in Cincinnati, a man was arrested on Wednesday for allegedly trying to use a stolen credit card at a drugstore. He came up for a bond hearing. Eric Hine appeared in court, and his attorney said he should be admitted to bond because he's a churchgoer, Your Honor. He goes to church, and he's an upright and moral man, Your Honor. Bear in mind, this guy's accused of credit card fraud. Credit card fraud? Hell, he's probably a fundamentalist minister. When the lawyer said he's a churchgoer, he's a Christian, you have to give him bond. The judge said, "Okay, recite the 23rd Psalm." That was the basis of his ruling on bond. Meanwhile, the right wing's out there screaming and saying, "Well, you know, the Islamic people are going to make us have that Sharia law here in America." Judge John Berlew has already brought it to Cincinnati. "Kid, I'll admit you to bond if you can recite Bible verses." Eric Hine repeated the 6 verses of the 23rd Psalm. People in the courtroom applauded, and Berlew admitted him to a $10,000 personal recognizance signature bond. Nobody even had to put up any damn property. Had enough? That's it. We're done for tonight. Agnes produced. Brian Reznor announced. John Fox engineered. Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, maintained the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all the programs on the Horn. He's still raising funds, and he's not doing it for his health. He's doing it so these programs can stay on the air. If you haven't given, give. If you haven't given lately, give again. If you're able. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT consultant. We have wonderful moderators. ELO, Lottie, Peter, in the chat room. The News Ninjas. Gene, Susan, Sue, do a wonderful job. Betsy. And, of course, all this happens because there are several thousand members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who get up every day and build the American dream and support this network and help us to save the American dream. Tomorrow is another day, and we'll do it again. This staying up late has got to end, Liza. Off to bed with you. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you. Radio Network.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the Blue Waters in Sandy Beach. It's a beautiful